has to stop now as another young life is lost. In other news, the Beeb agrees. They did boob.
We do have some breaking news that we want to get to. The BBC officially apologizing over a misleading edit to a January 6th speech.
This, as it emerges, it wasn't just Panorama. There's also doctoring going on at the show Newsnight. Health Secretary Wes Streeting's message to striking resident doctors. It starts now.
Money is tight. They've done well. I'm asking them to work with us rather than to expect us to be able to solve all problems for everyone, everywhere, all at once.
And Mr. Streeting here taking your calls later in the show. And not much cop. The failed experiment of police and crime commissioners to be ditched. Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, LBC understands the government has ditched plans to put up income tax in this month's budget. Chancellor Rachel Reeves had been expected to use it to plug a huge economic shortfall. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, has the details.
Rachel Reeves is reportedly set to abandon the idea to raise income tax in her budget after a week of turmoil in the party and in the government. Downing Street's refused to comment on reports. It comes after a week of extraordinary briefing wars within the party and days of Labour MPs saying the government will face a serious backlash if they broke that key manifesto promise.
Resident doctors are beginning 5 days of walkouts across England in a row over pay. The British Medical Association is demanding a 26% pay rise. Earlier this week, Wes Streeting told LBC the government has been more than fair to doctors.
I think the BMA has behaved really irresponsibly, given they've had a 28.9% pay rise. And I've offered to cancel their various exam fees and portfolio fees. Money is tight. They've done well. I'm asking them to work with us rather than to expect us to be able to solve all problems for everyone, everywhere, all at once. That's not how life works. And I think most people get that.
NHS bosses say they will try to keep nearly all services running and patients are being told to attend appointments unless told otherwise. The Health Secretary will be taking your calls here on LBC after 9 o'clock. The BBC has apologised to Donald Trump over the selective editing of a speech in a Panorama documentary. The corporation says it strongly disagrees there's a basis for compensation, though, after the US president said he'd sue them for $1 billion. Ministers have announced a ban on landlords evicting their tenants without a reason. The Renters' Rights Act will be brought in May next year. It will also mean landlords will be prevented from allowing bidding wars between prospective tenants. And heavy rain is causing travel problems this morning, with trains cancelled in parts of the country. Stations including Birmingham Moore Street, Carlisle and Exeter St David's are affected. Some parts of England could see 80 millimetres of rain today. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen at 98.08 after closing down 104 points yesterday. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 13. LBC weather, Storm Claudia is bringing heavy rain and strong winds for most of England and Wales. Bright with some sunshine in Scotland, with highs of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
No one sees your small business like you do. The feeling when that unexpected big contract comes in. The butterflies. But that's the exciting bit of it being your business. And you wouldn't have it any other way. So breathe it all in. When your business is your life, we exist to help you live. Search O2 Business.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes after seven on Friday, the 14th of November, the 10-year-old music-loving schoolgirl who was failed by pretty much everyone, healthcare professionals and neighbours, particularly because they didn't want to be branded racist. Her father was torturing her to death. I'll share some of the details with you, but I will give you a listening warning, as it were. It is a particularly grave story. And I'll also be asking, when will this fear of being branded a racist end? How can we allow the rule of law to in some way be ignored by that? Because, oh, you're doing that because you're racist. This girl was being tortured to death, for God's sake. If you don't act then... In other news, as the one-in, one-out scheme descends into farce, a meeting was held in Crowborough in Sussex, where there are some military barracks where some of these migrants could be settled. Here's the moment residents started heckling council and Home Office officials during that meeting.
If there are questions that you disagree with the answers, that is entirely your right to do so, but it doesn't help to shout and insult them, OK? We'll get nowhere with it.
The resident doctor's strike has begun, as you heard on the LBC News Bulletin. Wes Streeting is going to join us later in the show to take your calls. In other government matters, not much cop the ludicrous idea, introduced by the Conservatives, I hasten to add, the ludicrous idea of having police commissioners. Labour quite rightly now is to fold that idea. Here's Policing Minister Sarah Jones speaking to LBC.
The number of people who can name their police and crime commissioner, the number of people who understand what the function is, the number of people who partake in elections is low and it hasn't increased over time.
Plus, literally, money for old rope?
Some piles of rope are being sold as art for £1 million. I'm LBC's Helen Hoddenott at the dockyard, seeing if I too can get money for old rope.
Breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I'll tell you when you can compare and contrast, but I have to say, I think Helen, given the little time she was offered, hers is considerably better. That bloke spent months wandering around the UK. Helen had about 20 minutes in the Chatham dockyard. She's done a fine job. I'll tell you when you can see those photographs a little bit later, 6 minutes after seven. God knows we need to lift the mood because this is a tragic story. The so-called safeguarding report that's revealed that professionals and neighbours were frightened to speak out over the death, the torture to death of a 10-year-old girl because they feared they'd be branded racist. Should warn you that certainly when I get the report back, I'm going to share with you some pretty grim details, and I imagine my LBC colleague has got some grim listening too. LBC's South East correspondent Emma Corr was at the trial at the Old Bailey. Now, that took place, remember, December last year, but the safeguarding review was published yesterday, which is why it has fresh impetus. Emma joins me now. Emma, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, this damning review reveals how Sara Sharif was let down by the authorities again and again, missing multiple chances to protect her, the 10-year-old who loved singing and dancing. Nick, this report claims Sara's father, Irfan Sharif's track record as a serial perpetrator of domestic abuse was overlooked. We learned that Sara's school raised concerns about bruising on her face just months before her death, but social services closed the case after only 6 days. Sara was then taken out of school by her father and stepmother for homeschooling, completely isolated at the family home in Woking. The review also points out that it wasn't properly investigated why Sara started wearing a hijab when other family members weren't, saying an occupational therapist was reluctant to mention it for fear of causing offence. We now know she wore one to hide her injuries. Neighbours also said they feared being branded as a racist if they reported any concerns. And the day before Sara died, council staff tried to visit the family home but went to the wrong address. Chief Executive of Surrey County Council, Terence Herbert, has apologised for the failures.
It's very clear that there are national and local learning points and there are recommendations for both. We will fully implement those recommendations where we haven't already done so, and we have already moved to improve our services. The report's also clear that there were actions that could and should have been taken by this organisation, and they weren't, and for that I profoundly apologise.
And Sara was known to social services from birth, Nick, placed on a child protection plan in 2013. 10 years later, on the 9th of August 2023, police found her body in a bunk bed at her home in Woking, and there were signs of prolonged torture. And a warning here, Nick, she had bruises, burns, multiple fractures, and we learned during the trial she'd been tied up and hooded, and those injuries inflicted with an iron, a cricket bat, and and a metal pole. Horrendous abuse that went on for a long time. And in court last year, Nick, this was played. It was her father, Irfan Sharif, calling police, telling them he had legally punished his daughter.
I killed my daughter. I killed my daughter.
How have you killed your daughter?
I beat her up. It wasn't my intention to kill her, but I beat her up too much.
Well, what's come out of this 62-page review? 15 recommendations, which includes calls to close loopholes around at-risk children being withdrawn from school, demands for safeguarding teams to be better trained in understanding the behaviours of domestic abusers, and for culture, race and language to be considered in safeguarding decisions. The review states Sara's father and her stepmother, Binash Batul, who are now serving life sentences for murder, were a lethal combination and missed opportunities to join up the dots between agencies ultimately cost Sara Sharif her life.
Emma Corr reporting for LBC, 10 minutes after 7. Well, as Emma told us, the level of injuries, just to tell you, there were 71 external injuries on this little girl's body. Let's turn first to Joanna Nicholas, who is a child safeguarding consultant and a social worker. Afraid to cause offence, afraid of being branded racist. Joanna, have you heard these sort of stories and cases before? And if so, how often? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I have heard it many times, too many times. It's a very common factor often when you have a child who is not a white British child who has died in terrible circumstances, that there is this fear to raise concerns about parents of these children sometimes.
I don't doubt for a moment the Surrey Social Services team will be feeling this very keenly and probably still come to terms with what they've missed. How is this to be combated, Joanna?
Well, it's broader than social services. It's everybody. It's everybody working with children. We have to...
I think lifting the hijab does come down to a social service officer, don't you? Rather than neighbours saying, you need to lift the little girl's hijab.
And also school, school accepting. I don't, pointing fingers, I don't, it's never helpful, but school accepting.
Well, the school blew the whistle, as it were, three times, Joanna.
Yeah, I know, I'm aware of that.
And the social service team went to the wrong address.
How do we combat it?
Yeah.
Was your question,
yeah,
Nick.
So how do we beat it?
And
yeah.
I would say what we need is we need to strip away race, religion, ethnicity, culture, strip it all away with every single child and look at that child the same way you would a white British child. Am I concerned about this behaviour? Is it any different? Have I got concerns about that I'm going to be accused of racism? Talk those through with your manager. Talk it through. Never shy away from things and don't accept. Because, again, what happens so often is the parents who are abusing their child will say, we're doing it for cultural reasons. You don't understand. We're doing it for religious reasons. You don't understand. But if you wouldn't accept it for a white British child, you mustn't accept it for this child, because every single child in Britain deserves to be protected to the same level.
We're talking about evil on an unimaginable scale, if you read some of the background notes to this case. Are these people often very deceptive and manipulative as well?
Always. Always. They are very, very clever people. I think it's a red herring, this headline we've seen about there was a visit the day before she died, almost sort of inferring that if they'd gone to the right address, that Sara would still be alive. But it was the homeschooling team who were trying to visit, and they would have been fobbed off by this man. He was clearly very clever, adept at getting rid of people and grooming professionals and manipulating people. They would never have been allowed into the property.
Joanne, I enjoyed speaking with you. Joanne Nicholas, your child safeguarding consultant and social worker, 13 after 7. Listening, Albi Amankona, who's a political commentator and co-founder of Conservatives Against Racism. So how is this to be broken down, that there is this, or when did this fear start? If we're going to beat it, we have to know how it started. How did it start that we can't effectively allow the rule of law in the case of this poor 10-year-old girl? Good morning to you, Albie.
Good morning, Nick. I just think this is such a tragic story. And when I was reading the report, I couldn't help but just feel incredible sorrow, but also incredible anger as well. I mean, not only is there the race and culture aspect of this, and to be honest, Nick, I'm sick and tired of hearing about officials not doing their job because they're worried about being called racist. I mean, since when did being worried about being called racist, trump a child's safety, a child's well-being, whether or not we're talking about the awful case of Sara Sharif, where this young girl has ended up dead, or, of course, the grooming gangs, the rape gangs, as some people call them. People speak in that context about race and cultural issues, stopping the authorities from taking the relevant action. I'm sick of people using that as almost a fig leaf to not do their jobs properly, and then people, children, ending up seriously harmed or dying as a result.
Can it be wound back? If so, how is it to be wound back, Albie?
I think it absolutely has to be wound back. I think the precedence that these issues of race, ethnicity and culture are given when it comes to these cases, I mean, it just has to be removed. As the previous contributor said, people have got to feel comfortable to talk to their managers about it. People have got to feel comfortable to take the appropriate action. People have got to feel comfortable to actually do the adequate investigation when they flag something which doesn't seem right, like an 8-year-old girl starting to wear a hijab. And then they ask the parents and stepmother a question, and they say it's because of a recent trip to Pakistan and they have a newfound interest for their Pakistani culture. But then they're also not thinking or asking Muslims themselves, well, when is it that girls start wearing hijabs after puberty? 8-year-old girls have not started puberty. Why is it that they didn't go round to the local mosque and actually asked how often it was that the father attended mosque? I think he might have attended mosque once. So this is not a devout Muslim family, and anyone who was competent at their job would have realised that story about the hijab was nonsense.
Albie, I must leave it there for time reasons. Enjoyed our conversation. Albie Amankona is political commentator and co-founder of Conservatives Against Racism. Isn't it funny when this... Sorry, not funny, isn't it? Perverse. When this came through to me yesterday, when my colleague phoned me and told me about it, I said, well, the first thing we need to know is when do Muslim girls start wearing hijabs? And as Albie, as Mr. Amankona just said, typically, there is no set age, but it's when they go to big school. It's 11, 12. It's certainly not at this age, but it's done to hide bruises as she's being tortured to death. How are we to combat this fear? You're only doing this, you're after this little Muslim girl because you're a racist. We'll look at that in more detail. Plus, taxing times for the Chancellor, or hang on, perhaps not so taxing times.
With less than 2 weeks to go, it seems the budget is in chaos as Starmer and Reeves scrap plans to raise income tax. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this shortly.
And also destined for the scrap heap, that ridiculous idea of police crime commissioners. Here's people in Merseyside when LBC asked them if they know what a police and crime commissioner actually does.
No.
No?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Not really, no.
I know what a chief superintendent does, but I wouldn't have a clue what the crime commissioner does.
More on that later in the show. The 7:15 LBC News headlines will be read by Lottie Morley.
LBC understands the government has ditched plans to put up income tax in this month's budget. Resident doctors have just begun a 5-day strike across England in a row over pay. And the BBC has apologised to Donald Trump over the selective editing of one of his speeches. LBC weather, Storm Claudia bringing heavy rain and strong winds for most of England and Wales, highs of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The roads are very wet after all the heavy rain, so much standing water, so do take extra care as that surface spray is reducing visibility. Very slow on the M25, anti-clockwise, so junction 25 at the A10. And that's because a van broke down earlier. It's just been recovered, but it's still very slow. In Upper Edmonton, Conduit Lane remains closed both ways, and that's because of an accident. Also, the problems continue on the underground. There are severe delays on the Northern Line and minor delays on the Metropolitan Line. On London Overground, there's no service for the Mildmay Line between Wilson Junction and Clapham Junction. And that's all down to a signal failure at Kensington Olympia.
LBC.
Introducing the redesigned Dell PC with the Intel Core Ultra Processor. It helps you handle a lot, even when your holiday to-do lists get to be a lot. Like organising your holiday shopping and responding to holiday requests and customer questions and customers requesting custom things, plus planning the perfect holiday dinner for vegans, vegetarians, pescatarians and Uncle Mike's carnivore diet.
Whoa.
Luckily, the Dell PC helps you handle a lot. And with impressive battery life, you can do it all faster to get it all done. That's the power of a Dell PC with Intel inside. Get yours at dell.co.uk/holiday.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Whether you're managing a business or a football club, your team are your biggest strength.
But when it comes to cybersecurity, they could also be your biggest weakness. 88% of cybersecurity breaches are caused by normal human error. So how do you help your team form the ultimate impenetrable line of defense? Just ask BT.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Yep, I'm still dancing. And there's still time to get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. So turn up that dial. The EuroMillions jackpot is £108 million. Go on, play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
You asked, BT answered.
Keeping your team cyber aware is really important in the modern marketplace. Regular training on things like data handling, spotting threats, and securing their devices helps you keep them and your business safe.
Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity to find out more.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Just coming up on 21 minutes after 7, we'll come back to your reactions. It's so depressing that one of the first tweets or emails that comes in, Michael, you're so keen to turn this into a racist issue. You're actually doing, and I don't wish to be rude to you personally, sir, but you're doing exactly what the family managed to achieve with the social workers and the neighbours by suggesting the fact that I want to look at this makes me a racist. Michael, pause and think. If you're prepared to live in a society where the life of a 10-year-old girl becomes secondary to the rule of law, because you fear that by saying to social services, possibly even to the police, I live in the same street as this little girl, I hear terrible things going on in the house, she's now wearing a hijab, I've asked my Muslim friends, she's wearing it about 5 years too soon, I really think we need to take a look at it. Now, what would have been interesting is how Surrey police would have responded. Ooh, that's a bit of a racist statement. I hope that wouldn't have been the case. Oh, thank you very much indeed, Mr. Ferrari. Yeah, okay, we'll have someone take a look. We'll knock on the door, see what happens. But, Michael, you are underscoring by suggesting I'm making this a racist issue. You are so far off the pace. I'm making this a safeguarding, as they call it these days, or a safety or a law and order issue, where a 10-year-old girl is not beaten to death in the most appalling circumstances, which, by the way, I've been around this business for more years now than I think I care to remember. This level of cruelty, you almost have to go back to the James Bulger case. It is extraordinary. And when you think it's inflicted by effectively her own father and those who are meant to care for her. But don't you worry, people like Michael, you keep telling me that I'm a racist because I want to try and put it right for that 10-year-old girl. You just keep telling yourself that. Extraordinary. I'd rather read this one from Chris. The race row is causing problems everywhere. People are scared of being branded racist. And it shows up in the police with the watering down now, stop and search. Maybe a different conversation of the latter of those two. Scott, you'll be the first caller. Let me quickly tell you the front pages, and it is the front page of some of the newspapers. Such a pretty girl smiling out from the front page of the Daily Express. Sara failed by officials, afraid to cause offence. Also, her picture is on the front page of the Daily Mail as well, and it is on the front page of the Daily Mirror. The missed chances to stop Sara's killer father. The Daily Telegraph, obviously they were prepared to change up quite late. Second Trump clip doctored by the BBC. This is the fact that Newsnight, Panorama was not alone. Newsnight also decided to doctor some of the evidence. And we now know, of course, that the BBC has, except we boobed, says the BBC. Lastly, let's look at the Times. 5 days of NHS strikes, opposed by most doctors. Wes Streeting, from whom you'll hear later, and indeed he is here taking your calls later in the show, he will say that the BMA is acting against members' wishes. We'll have more on that from the BMA in just a moment. Quickly to the LBC app. Well, they're picking up the story that was broken here on LBC. Reeves, as in the Chancellor, Rachel, scraps proposed income tax hike. We're going to have more on that in our regular look at the world of finance. And lastly, let's pick a story at random, and we go to the Sky News, in which it says that the BBC, as I've already said, responds to Trump's lawsuit threat and apologises. Right, let's talk about the terrible case of this young woman. Well, girl, she's not even a young woman, she's only a girl, isn't she? Really, a school girl. Scott's in West Hampstead. Scott, you're on the radio. How do we put this right? It's appalling.
Hi,
wrong.
Nick.
Good morning.
Hi, Nick. My feeling, I mean, I've dealt with child abuse situations as a school psychologist.
Yes, I remember talking to you about this. Yeah.
We spoke last week about
it. Yeah.
Over a 30-year period. And I always erred on the side of caution when there was a case conference, and I attended so many case conferences, you know, during my career. And I always erred on the side of caution when there was quite clear-cut evidence of child abuse going on, neglect of children, child abuse, you know, physical abuse and sexual abuse. These children came into care. I always said when I was asked, the question in the case conference, and everybody was around the table, the police, the social workers, head teacher, there's a psychiatrist involved, the family doctor, and I would always say, yes, the risk is too high. And I actually feel that the legislation needs to be strengthened to allow police and social workers to enter homes and remove the children at a much earlier stage. And I also feel that there should be a duty of candor on all citizens to report anything like this that they witness.
How would you enforce that, what you call duty of candor? I don't see how you'd make it a statutory law. Explain that to me.
It would be difficult to make that a statutory law. It would be in the form of guidance to citizens that they've got to keep a lookout. And I mean, it sounds awful, really. It sounds like you'll have a whole lot of people spying on their neighbours. But, you know, we have to be alert to this.
We do. Scott, I must leave it there. Stephen, you'll be the next caller on this, but we must reflect other stories. And, of course, the resident doctors, or junior doctors, as they once were, the strike action begins today. 7:26 is the time, by the way. And after 9, you'll be hearing from and put your questions and calls to Health Secretary Wes Streeting. But let's reflect on one of the front pages. Most junior doctors do not support today's strike, a poll has revealed. Wes Streeting attacks the BMA, British Medical Association, for going against the wishes of its members. Let's bring in Dr. Emma Runswick, who's deputy chair of the BMA Council and a resident doctor in psychiatry. Thank you very much for coming on, Doctor. So the poll that Wes Streeting is citing, and it's on the front page of one of the newspaper, The Times, says only 33% of BMA junior or resident doctors said they agree to going on strike. Is that a number you recognise? Good morning.
Not at all. This is a tiny survey of less than 200 doctors. We've had several surveys of our members in the form of ballots, which have shown overwhelming support for action, if necessary, for jobs and pay. We've got a serious problem.
When was the last one, Doctor, might I ask, just so that I can put it to Mr. Streeting later, when was the last one?
The last one was in September. We balloted on jobs and pay, and we've had huge numbers of doctors, clear majorities of doctors voting in those ballots.
Might I ask the figure, Doctor, so that I can put it directly to the Health Secretary?
I actually cannot recall the last figure because we've had...
Do you recall turnout, by any chance?
Well, turnout is always higher than 50%, else it doesn't count. You can't have a strike unless you have high turnout.
We'll look up those figures, but... Do you think that the science survey is totally wrong?
I do, because we've got a surreal situation where we have had this year 20,000 doctors turned away from jobs, 30,000 applicants for 10,000 jobs for progression to become the consultants and GPs that we need in the future. You'll see across the press this morning we've got several examples of people who are having to pick up just shifts when there is sickness, a couple of people who are literally on job seekers. This is an absolutely outrageous situation when patients are waiting for appointments and in corridors. And we can do better than this as a society, as a health service. We want to see that problem solved, and we think that Mr. Streeting can solve it with us.
Well, I think, in a way, this is even more intriguing than your claim for pay and possibly even greater to campaign on with greater respect to the BMA, because you mentioned the papers. There's a gentleman called Jacob McSweeney featured in the Daily Mirror today. He's told how he faces unemployment. He's one of 20,000 young doctors who cannot get permanent employment. Doctor, I don't understand this, because I hear time and time and time, we need more doctors. It would appear great men and women are coming through the training and are ready to be doctors. Why can't we get them in place? I don't get it.
I mean, it's a failure of workforce planning over many, many years and failure to fund those jobs. So we've turned up the tap, improving the number of medical students who come through the system. And we changed the immigration system to allow more doctors to come from abroad when we have serious, serious gaps. But then we haven't created the jobs for those people to move into, resulting in this absolutely surreal situation where we've got patients waiting and we need more doctors, but we can't get them permanent jobs.
So is it a simple thing that as a senior doctor retires or goes elsewhere, they don't fill his or her position to try and save cash. So that level doctor, sorry, we're on the radio, a doctor who's at a lower level cannot be promoted to a higher level. Therefore, they're almost like bed blockers in a sense. Is that roughly what we're talking about, doctor?
There's a whole range of problems. So definitely we've got hiring freezes across the hospital sector, which is affecting consultants being hired. Yes, we're talking today about residents who are in a bottleneck between two stages of training. So they have worked for 2 years, they've done medical school, they've worked for 2 years and gained the more basic layer of training whilst working. But now they are choosing to specialise to become a GP or a consultant, so a surgeon or an anaesthetist or a psychiatrist. And there are not enough jobs at those levels to allow people to progress, to become the real experts that run our hospitals for 10, 20, 30, 40 years
but
down the line.
Lastly, doctor, I wouldn't dream of turning your job, but why don't you campaign on that? Because when we read that you'll want, 26% pay rise over the next 3 years or something like that, that does jar a little bit with the general public. The fact that these men and women have put in so many years training and they can't get work as a doctor, that's going to resonate with the public more, isn't it, doctor?
Absolutely. This is a dual dispute, jobs and pay. We need to be able to get people into work and then keep them in the NHS long term. Both issues need solutions. We've put reasonable solutions on Mr. Streeton's table. He can't move with us at the moment. He's offering just 1,000 additional jobs this year, which when you've got 20,000 doctors turned away, it just doesn't touch the sides. We need to see employment guarantees for those doctors who are already living and working and training here in the UK. We need to see massive expansion of jobs so that patients can get the care they deserve.
All right, grateful for your time. Thank you, Dr. Emma Runswick. You're Deputy Chair of the BMA Council. You are a resident doctor in psychiatry. Let's ensure we get those numbers when we speak to Wes Streeting, who's with us after nine. It is 7:31, coming up after the news.
Earlier this week, Storm Claudia began life across Iberia. This wet and windy weather is now pushing across England and Wales with amber warnings for rain, a flood risk. I'll be talking to Nick about the details.
7:31, as I say, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Newstime, Lottie Morley.
Downing Street has refused to deny reports the Chancellor will make a U-turn on increasing income tax in the budget. It's thought Rachel Reeves and Sir Keir Starmer have abandoned the idea over fears it would lead to a backlash. Thousands of resident doctors have now gone on strike across England. The British Medical Association is asking for a 26% pay rise in a long-running dispute over pay and jobs. Patients are being told to attend appointments as usual, unless told otherwise. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, will be here taking your calls on LBC after 9 o'clock. The BBC has apologised to Donald Trump over the selective editing of a speech in a Panorama documentary. The corporations admitted it made it look like the US president was calling for violence, but says it strongly disagrees there's a basis for compensation. LBC weather, Storm Claudia is bringing heavy rain and strong winds for most of England and Wales. Highs of 16 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
It's not a popular view. It'd be very easy to say that, of course, these WASPI women should be compensated. A terrible wrong has befallen them. We can't afford 10.5 billion quid, I'm afraid. And 10.5 billion quid because there wasn't a letter sent directly to you, even though there were television adverts and newspaper campaigns, and it was talked about in the press, and you are responsible for checking your financial affairs. That's not, I'm afraid, going to be the thing that gets 10.5 billion quid over the line.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. In a world speeding to make car finance claims, make sure you're in full control. You don't need to go with a claims company and risk losing more than 30% of what you're owed. Put yourself in pole position. Don't rush. Be ready.
Looking to make a claim on your car finance? Get 100% of the facts. Go to fca.org.uk/car-finance-claims.
Claiming soon.
This is the 810 to Birmingham New Street. Calling at Organise To-Do List. Call your PA. Shoot off a few emails. Close laptop. Head to the shop. Man behind the counter seems like a good egg. Thinking of eggs, one breakfast butty, please.
Business travel by train is time well spent with Avanti West Coast.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is, and you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34. Apologies, Stephen. You will be the next caller when we come back to that tragic story of the 10-year-old girl who was tortured to death and people not doing action because taking any action they feared they'd be branded racist. But let's get into the world of business as we always do around this time of the morning. Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM. Christian, it strikes me, I don't know what you and I are going to talk about in about 15 days' time or whatever sport when this budget is finally over. We'll have to start talking about Donald Trump again. But we have another budget story this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, yes. Clearly total victory for City AM, who has been warning against raising income tax. We now discover that the Chancellor and the Prime Minister have decided not to do it. No, I'm afraid it's not quite as clear-cut as that. Reports emerging overnight, first of all in the Financial Times, that the Chancellor and the Prime Minister have decided not to go ahead with their plan to break the manifesto pledge not to raise income tax. They had laid the groundwork for that move with some couple of extraordinary interventions from the Chancellor in recent days, saying basically that's exactly what they're going to do and trying to explain why they were going to do it. It's now emerged that they've changed their mind. Now, a generous reading of events would be that ministers are perfectly entitled to change their policies, change their ideas after they've assessed the impact and seen the potential fallout. A less generous view, or I would suggest a more accurate view, is that it's complete chaos. We know the political situation in number 10 is febrile, and we know that the Chancellor still has around £30 billion of tax rises to find. If she says she's not going to find that by raising income tax, I'm afraid it puts all sorts of other taxes back on the table, including business taxes, including all sorts of complicated things around capital gains tax and goodness knows what. It is also suggested that instead of raising the rates, they may now just lower the thresholds. So think about that for a moment. The basic rate of tax is what you pay on earnings up to about £50,000. Perhaps they'll lower that to £45,000. You pay the higher rate of tax on things between £50,000 and £125,000. Perhaps you'll start paying that at a lower rate of income. I mean, this is basically like saying, no, you haven't shrunk. We've just put the ceiling up higher. Well, however you explain it, you're going to feel smaller. So I do think there is a considerable degree of chaos around the budget process at the moment. The most unbelievable amount of kite flying and pitch rolling and groundwork has gone in to get us to a point to accept the need for income tax rises. And now it looks like they're not going to do it. It is, I'm afraid, a mess.
I've asked you this recently. Why do the actions of Michael Burry attract such excitement and indeed front page headlines?
This is the investor who inspired the film The Big Short. He ran his hedge fund in the run-up to the global financial crisis. He bet against the housing market and famously made an extraordinary amount of money when it crashed. And as you and I have discussed recently, he was beginning to lay the groundwork to do the same sort of thing when it comes to AI stocks, which have got the most runaway valuations in the US. And he was calling time on that, placing big bets in the market that those valuations were going to fall. Now, they have slipped, and indeed they slipped again just yesterday as people start to question whether they're going to come good on their promises from a financial perspective, but they're not falling anything like the way he was anticipating. What's happened now is he has closed his hedge fund. He has written to investors effectively saying, I'm out. Now, he's still pretty sceptical about the runaway valuations of these AI stocks, but he's closed out his market positions on this and he's going to move on to something else. He's basically saying, sod it. You're on your own. I'm not going to play anymore. So we will watch with interest what it is he's going to do next, look at next. He's quite cryptic on social media. But as I say, it is still the case that AI stocks have slipped. They slipped throughout the week, but they don't appear to be crashing down yet in the way that this hedge fund was anticipating or suggesting that they would. And he's called time on it.
Lastly, tell the listeners what's happening about the London congestion charge and the fact that it might make the rollout of EVs, or electric vehicles, stall. Christian.
Well, the congestion charge itself will rise by 20% in January. So there you go. There's another non-budget related cost of living hike. It'll rise 20% in January from £15 to £18. And electric vehicle drivers will be liable to pay it to enter the centre of the capital for the first time. Electric vehicles have previously been exempt from the levy as part of the move to encourage people to take up those vehicles. There are now six times as many electric vehicles registered to drive into central London than there were when in 2019. So the Mayor's Office, TfL, I'm sure, are just going to say, well, look, we have to do this now because this is about stopping congestion, and congestion is congestion whether the car's got a petrol engine or a battery in it. Electric vehicles will still pay a lower rate, but they will pay nonetheless from January.
Enjoy your weekend. Christian Mayers, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. Thank you for that. 7:39 is the time. Sorry, a little bit of outdoor language there. Christian's clearly an angry man. He's getting ready to read his paper again next week. Stephen's in Birmingham. Thank you for hanging on the line, Stephen. Let's talk about this girl, this 10-year-old girl. How do we put that right?
The Sarah Sharif case, for example, there's many cases where kids have been abused and killed and everything else. We don't seem to learn. We have reports, we have counsellors, and the police say, and local government say, yes, we shall learn, but nothing has changed in 5 or 10 years.
What happens now? What should change, Stephen?
I don't know. I'm not the person to answer. But, you know, where I live in Birmingham, there was a case where a kid, he was an Addie Blues reporter, and he got killed. We had reports and everything.
Sorry, there was a
change,
what? A blue, did you say? Blues?
Well, he was a Blues supporter.
Oh, a Birmingham supporter.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah, Birmingham City. Yeah, go on, yeah.
And he was an avid Blues supporter.
Right.
And all that's happened, we had a government say, yes, things will change. The police said, things will change. The social services, things will change, but nothing has in 5 or 10 years.
And that is, I'm afraid, the reality. Stephen, thank you. Thank you for hanging on the line. Andrew in Croydon. Andrew, your reaction to this story. Good morning.
Thank you, Nick. It was just really picking up on what your safeguarding expert, Joanna, was talking about this morning, one of the points she raised quite clearly. And it was about standards. I mean, I'm involved in safeguarding as well, particularly around modern slavery. I work and deliver training to people where we're dealing with exploitation, whether that's children or adults from all parts of the world, all cultures, mm-hmm. and where that training basically says, doesn't matter where these things occur, we apply UK standards mm-hmm. to what has happened to these people. Yet seemingly we're still fearful to apply that sort of level of standard back at home. You know, in this particular case, people's fears that they're going to be branded this or that, as you quite rightly say, how can that be overriding?
Yep.
When it comes to somebody's life. But unfortunately, you know, for me, when I look at it, people talk about, you know, in different cultures, they have different values, but yet it has to be UK standards and UK values that we apply here.
How common are these problems, lastly, Andrew, in the work that you do?
In terms of modern slavery, obviously these things occur all over the world. You know, and I'm not going to go into the asylum part, modern slavery. But I think, we reiterate when I deliver training about the need to apply our standards of law and our standards of society, no matter where these offences occur around the world.
Andrew, thank you for your input on that. We'll return to this conversation in a moment. 7:42. Now, be aware, Storm Claudia is blowing in. No, nothing to do with traitors. Rather, the latest name for the latest storm. And here with all the details, meteorologist and broadcaster Claire Nazir. Claire, good to have you on this morning. Where and when are we looking at? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, this rain has intensified through the night. It's pushing northwards, covering most of England and Wales. This storm originated across Spain and Portugal, so we've inherited this name from Spain, and there were impacts there as well as the Canaries. But we're expecting, particularly across southeastern parts of Wales, the Midlands towards East Anglia, up to 100 millimetres of rain through the next 24 hours over the hills, a little less elsewhere, but even so, the rivers are swollen, the land is saturated, we are expecting some flooding associated with this storm. Strong winds as well, there is a wind warning across the northwest of England, northwestern parts of Wales. Yet again, we could see gusts up to 60 miles an hour, and it's slow moving. So this is heavy, prolonged and slow moving wet weather, which will eventually move towards the far north of England and continue to fall across much of Wales and the Midlands. So yes, there are risks out there, and the combination of wind and rain means problems on the roads, particularly if you're travelling north or south across England and Wales today.
And for the weekend, just, I don't know, Claire, just suppose that someone was going to be in, oh, I don't know, the Twickenham area tomorrow
yes.
For a bit of rugby. I think there's a game going
right.
on, and they were planning to be in the car park, you know, before kickoff or after wards. What advice would you give them, Claire?
Well, first of all, I hope the person or the team that you want to win will win.
Thank you.
Yes.
Go on, England.
But yes. With Twickenham tomorrow is going to be cloudy, a little damp and rather breezy. So you're okay. You're good to go. In fact, we have a Christmas light switch on here in Cheshire and it's going to be a bit damp, but much colder across Scotland. So we're talking maybe even snow over the mountains. So there's a different weather going on. Just, you know, keep an eye on the forecast enjoy tomorrow.
And probably don't play the high ball game. Claire Nazir is meteorologist and broadcaster. Claire, thank you for input on that. Let's pick up on social media what you're saying about the case of that 10-year-old girl, Kim in Battersea. To hear Sarah's little voice singing, knowing she was going through so much pain by the people who should have loved her. I'm a grandmother of 12. I would walk over hot coals to protect them. That's Kim in Battersea. Similar here. For Beverly, when I read the story about Sarah Sharif, I cried. The family lived next door ignored the cries. I feel complicit in her death. We keep hearing lessons will be learnt. This is what Stephen was saying. Lessons will be learnt. Nothing changes. And lastly, Alan, that recording of the little girl singing that you played made me, an old man, cry. I'm a father and grandfather. I can't tell you how angry I am to think the father of a lovely girl could hurt her so much. Evil is too nice a name for that swine. Well, I'm not going to say that it made me cry, but it certainly brought me up when I heard it on the news, that little girl's voice and what you think, what she endured. I know exactly what you're saying, Alan. Coming up after the news, how Idris Elba and the King are possibly going to help bring jobs to our young people. I'll explain more. Plus,
we do have some breaking news that we want to get to involving the president, as the BBC officially apologizing over a misleading edit to a January 6th speech.
That's Fox News. Has he never seen the words or the letters BBC before? It's like he's reading it for the first time. And we now know that, of course, Panorama was not the only offence. Newsnight also in the frame. Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy joins us after this. 7:45 LBC News headlines, read by Lottie Morley.
Downing Street has refused to deny reports the Chancellor will make a U-turn on income tax in the budget. Thousands of resident doctors have now gone on strike across England. And the BBC has apologised to Donald Trump over the selective editing of a speech in a Panorama documentary. LBC weather, Storm Claudia bringing heavy rain and strong winds for most of England and Wales. Bright and sunny in Scotland with highs of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The roads are very wet after all the heavy rain. So much standing water around. It's causing surface spray, so do take extra care. There are delays on the M3 northbound to Junction 5 at Hook after an accident. And in Upper Edmonton, Conduit Lane is closed both ways after an accident. Lots of bus routes around West, Northwest and Southwest London are disrupted. It's because of an ongoing strike. On the Underground, the Piccadilly line is suspended again today between Rainers Lane and Uxbridge. On London Overground, the Mild May line is suspended between Wilson Junction and Clapham Junction, and that's all down to a signal failure. And there's a reduced service across the Chiltern network, and that's because of the bad weather.
This is LBC.
This year's Vodafone Black Friday deals are here. Get iPhone 16e and save a huge £468. One of the many incredible savings you won't want to miss. Hurry, deal ends 1st of December. Go in-store or search Vodafone Black Friday today. Vodafone.
Save £468, 1 gigabyte plan over 36 months. Phone cost £588. Eligibility, credit checks and terms apply. Financed by Vodafone.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Oh, total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webeanycar.com.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10 minutes before eight, and I asked you just then what links the King, Idris Elba, and a drive to get more jobs. Well, we're going to hear more from that from the Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, Lisa Nandy, in just a moment. The Secretary of State joins me. Thank you for coming on, and I guarantee you I will ask you questions about this, but there are other issues we have to address first. And we come again to the BBC. Two developments there. There is now that apology, and we learn that Panorama was not a lone offender. There also seems to have been some doctoring of sorts, allegedly, at Newsnight. Your reaction to those two lines overnight? Secretary of State, good morning to you.
Hello, good morning. Well, as you'd imagine, Nick, as the Culture Secretary, I've been speaking regularly to the BBC leadership over the last week. They're, of course, independent, and they guard their independence very seriously, as do we. But my job is to make sure that they're gripping this at the most senior levels. I think they'd already acknowledged before the Newsnight episode came to light that the processes that they've got in the organisation and the mix of experience that they've got at the top of the organisation in terms of journalism and editorial standards needs to be strengthened. I really welcome that, and we're working with them to support them to make sure that they're able to grip that, to be able to get those proper processes in place. With regards to President Trump and the letters that have been sent in the last few hours, I have obviously had discussions with the BBC leadership about the response that they're giving. They have consulted their own lawyers. They're confident in their legal case and that they haven't committed defamation. But nevertheless, these were serious failings that damaged trust in one of our most respected institutions here and all over the world. And so I think they are right to apologise for that, having already apologised to the public and to the House of Commons. I think it's right to apologise to the President as well.
I think you put your finger on it there, Secretary of State, because a lot of my listeners will probably be puzzled as to why it's taken them so long. How much reluctance was there within the senior circles with whom you work to actually put this apology out there?
So I don't think there was a reluctance, actually. One of the things that I have felt very much over the last week is that at the most senior levels, the BBC leadership has been prepared to acknowledge where these huge mistakes were made, and look very openly and willingly at the systems that they've got in place to prevent it from happening again. And I say that to you, Nick, as somebody who has expressed quite a lot of frustration with the BBC leadership over the last 15 months or so on a number of cases, whether it was the Gaza documentary or the live broadcast from Glastonbury or workplace culture issues. You know, we had Hugh Edwards, we had the issues at MasterChef and others. And I haven't been shy at expressing my frustration when they've been too slow to react. But I think in this instance, there is a willingness to acknowledge and own up to mistakes very quickly. Yes. And then to put them right.
You could be accused of being a little out of step, though, on the weekend. You were still defending. You were almost the political equivalent of a football chairman. You were still saying that you had every confidence in Tim Davie. And hours later, he stood down. You are the chairman, aren't you? You're the chairman of the Ford.
What fueled
this misplaced confidence, Lisa Nandy?
Well, look, it was Tim's decision to leave the BBC. And I do stand by that. I, all the way through this last week, I felt that at the most senior level, whether it's the chairman of the board or the director general, there has been a willingness to accept mistakes that have been made, to understand the gravity of that, and to put in place measures to start to grip that and to turn it around. And obviously I've been having discussions with senior leaders, including the director general, over the last week, including going into the weekend. It was his decision to go. But what is more important now is that, you know, having thanked him for his work and his service over a long period of time, that we get the right, structures at the top of the organisation. And I know that the board is taking that very seriously.
And lastly on this, how long will the current Director General and the CEO of News, Tim Davey, Deborah Turness, respectively, how long will they stay in post?
Well, we expect that it takes a few months to get a new Director General. I know that the Chairman has already started that process internally, getting the right things in place in order to be able to kickstart that process externally as soon as possible. And the Director General has been very clear that he will stay through the transition. He's worked for the BBC for a very long time and given a lot of service to it. And I think his priority is to make sure that he sees the BBC through a difficult time and into new leadership. And obviously the deputy to the head of news has been appointed in an interim position. Right. But I think it's important, and more importantly, as an independent institution, the BBC leadership thinks it's important that whoever comes in as Director General is able to shape the senior leadership team, which is why they've taken that approach, which is one that I support.
Let's move to a more positive news. How is the King, Idris Elba and you getting together to create jobs for young people? Lisa Nandy.
Now there's a sentence. We, over the last 15 months or so...
I'm very fond of two of those three. Do go on, Lisa and Andy.
Oh, interesting. Over the last 15 months or so, we've been working really closely with the King's Trust in particular, but also with the Idris Elba Foundation on the many, many challenges facing this generation of young people, whether it's gang and knife crime or lack of opportunity. And today I'm really pleased that we're able to announce a huge expansion of the work that they've been doing to get more young people into the creative industries. If you talk to young people from working class backgrounds or from outside of London about whether they think they'd be able to get a job in film, TV, music, fashion, some of the fastest growing areas of our economy, the answer too often is no. Every child growing up in this country dreams big. Most of them don't have a chance, and we are absolutely determined that that's going to change.
All right, well, good luck with that. On to other matters. It would appear now that despite having rolled the pitch or whatever it is that we should get ready for some increases in taxation, we're now not going to have increases in taxation, according to the latest news. Are you supportive of that, Lisa Nandy?
Well, I'll always support the Chancellor. I've known her for a long time. We've been friends for 15 years now, and in every conversation I've ever had with her, I know that she's fiercely focused on the interests of the public and is prepared to face down people who aren't. And so over the last few months, I've been having discussions with her and her team about various aspects of the budget as they relate to my department. And in all of those discussions, it's been about fixing the foundations of the economy so that we can get the economy growing, and it's been about opening up opportunities for people and making life easier for people, whether it's cutting NHS waiting lists or extending free breakfast clubs and free school meals to more children. Right. And I really support her in that. I think you've got to wait a few more weeks, Nick. I'm sorry about that. I know that we always say that on the show, but it's not long to go now.
Minute or so together. Is a pile of old rope worth £1 million, Secretary of State?
What does this mean?
This is an exhibition where an artist has gone round collecting old rope up and down the country. It's going to go on, as I say, on exhibition, and he's put a nominal value, literally, of old rope, of £1 million. You've not seen the headlines on this?
I haven't seen the headlines on this, but if you tell me where it is, I might go and have a look.
Would you pay £1 million? Here we are.
A £1 million.
He's a Turner Prize nominated artist. David Shrigley, you probably know him or know of him, spent months scouring the UK for old material. He's put a 10-ton pile of rope on show at London's Stephen Friedman Gallery, and he's put a nominal value of £1 million. I'd hold it up for you, but you probably can't see it. Would you spend £1 million?
I don't have £1 million. If I had £1 million, Nick, I wouldn't have come on your show trying to save Wigan Athletic. I would have just bought it.
You'd have bought
myself.
It, yeah. Okay, lastly, and to important matters, will the Telegraph deal go ahead? Daily Telegraph deal?
Well, I'm sorry to be sound evasive, I promise.
Oh, you're not going to evade it again, are you? You've already done it with Tess. Are you going to be evasive again?
Look, it's because I'm the single decision maker in the end who has to uphold the public interest, so I have to look at it under the terms of the law with an open mind. But obviously the Telegraph is an important institution. We want to get a good buyer in place as quickly as possible and make sure that we defend the public interest in high-quality journalism. So, you know, once a deal is put in front of me, I'll obviously look at it with an open mind, but with a view to securing its future.
Grateful for your time talking about a £500,000 expansion of Creative Futures through the King's Trust and the Elba Hope Foundation, as in Israel Elba. My thanks to Lisa. Nandy, of course, is the culture secretary. The music means we must move on. And coming up after the news, an update on the story of Jim, the Afghanistan veteran. Do you remember, let down by Op Fortitude, but there has been a development, more on that. Plus,
some piles of rope are being sold as art for £1 million. I'm LBC's Helen Hoddenott at the dockyard, seeing if I too can get money for old rope.
Helen does a damn good job of that too, I have to tell you. And as the resident doctor's strike starts, Health Secretary Wes Streeting here taking your calls, not just, of course, on that pay demand, but it would appear thousands of doctors who are trained who can't get jobs. Those stories and more follow the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, the Culture Secretary has told LBC she will stand by Rachel Reeves ahead of her budget. Downing Street has refused to deny reports the Chancellor will make a U-turn on income tax later this month. It's thought Rachel Reeves and Sir Keir Starmer have abandoned the idea over fears it would lead to a backlash. Lisa Nandy told Nick the Chancellor is committed to making life better for the public.
Well, I'll always support the Chancellor. I've known her for a long time. We've been friends for 15 years now, and in every conversation I've ever had with her, I know that she's fiercely focused on the interests of the public and is prepared to face down people who aren't. And so over the last few months, I've been having discussions with her and her team about various aspects of the budget as they relate to my department. And in all of those discussions, it's been about fixing the foundations of the economy so that we can get the economy growing, and it's been about opening up opportunities for people and making life easier for people.
The Shadow Health Secretary has told LBC the government needs to get a backbone when it comes to dealing with resident doctors. Thousands across England are beginning a five-day strike this morning in a long-running dispute over pay and jobs. Stuart Andrew says the Health Secretary is now realising how difficult the issue is.
When we had the strikes under us as a government, Wes Streeting made it all sound so easy, didn't he? Saying all you need to do is just get round the table. Well, what he's finding now is that the BMA is a difficult organisation. There are militant elements of it that have taken over and have really brought about unacceptable demands.
Wes Streeting will be taking your calls here on LBC after 9 o'clock. The BBC says it won't be compensating Donald Trump after he threatened to sue the broadcaster for $1 billion. The organisation has apologised to the US president for a clip that made it look like he'd incited violence. Ministers have announced new rules for landlords will come in next year. The Renters' Rights Act will prevent bidding wars between prospective tenants. It will also stop landlords from evicting their tenants without a good reason. And Storm Claudia is bringing torrential rain to parts of England and Wales today. The rain has already caused travel disruption with some rail stations affected. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 98.08 after closing down 104 points yesterday. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.13. LBC weather, Storm Claudia bringing heavy rain and strong winds for most of England and Wales. Bright with some sunshine in Scotland, highs of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Oh! Hey, Mum, looks like someone's coming through the back gate.
Oh, it's not Barbara from judo again, is it? I can't listen to any more about her new boiler.
Or about the time she saw a ghost in her downstairs loo.
No, it's okay, look. It's just a dodgy-looking bloke in a hoodie.
Oh, thank God.
Hey, you, clear off. We
We know Judo!
Always know who's at your door with Ring's new 4K security cameras. Available now at ring.com and Amazon.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after eight on Friday, November the 14th. Coming up in this hour, as the government continues to laud the work of that one-in, one-out deal, the numbers are there. 113 have gone out. 8,011 have arrived. Yes, you did hear that correctly. And that, of course, is leading to pressure. And we'll take you to Crowborough, which is one of the two places in the United Kingdom identified for where military bases could now house some of these asylum seekers as the drive continues to get out of those hotel rooms. We'll bring you a report from a rather stormy and testy local council meeting last night that LBC attended. In other news, at last, they never were much cop, the idea of these police and crime commissioners. And what exactly do they do? A question we put to the good folk of Merseyside.
I know the title.
I don't know if they are, really.
Well, I've heard all three words. I don't know if I've heard all three words put together.
Do you know what they do?
No, not properly, no.
I love that. I've never heard those three words put together. Oh, that's tremendous. In other news, the doctors won't see you now. The strike action has begun. Health Secretary Wes Streeting told me earlier this week.
Money is tight. They've done well. I'm asking them to work with us rather than to expect us to be able to solve all problems for everyone, everywhere, all at once.
He's here later. He's here, actually, in just under an hour's time. He'll be taking your calls. Plus, another row concerning this man. BBC Newsnight, more doctored video. President Trump, the original.
We're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. And we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them.
But once it goes through the BBC propaganda machine,
we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women, and we fight. We fight like hell.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Honestly, you wouldn't tolerate that journalism on the Sittingbourne Herald, let alone the BBC that you and I will have to fund. It's quite incredible. Now, if you've been listening around this time the last couple of days, you'll have heard the story concerning Jim. Jim is a military veteran. He served in Afghanistan. And we got on with Jim after the relevant government minister told us and lauded the work of Operation Fortitude, which she said would ensure that if you were a veteran and you were homeless, or someone you knew, someone you loved, someone in your family, call this hotline and accommodation would be found for you. Well, we tried through Jim. This is what happened next.
You can't support your partner. You can only support yourself at this point. You don't can come along to some support accommodation.
There's no support, so there's no point in filling the form then?
Well, no, not if it's for you and your partner, no.
Right.
And they put the phone down. So the homeless scheme that is utterly hopeless. But there does appear to be an update. I remind you, they could look after Jim and his dog, but not his partner. And we talked about the emotional support. And you, God, my goodness me, you were contacting. Emails were still coming in yesterday after I'd come off air. I don't want to jinx it. And I want to give the Ministry of Defence, who have now, I would suggest, rather changed their position on this, for which I'm hugely grateful. So stay tuned. Monday, we'll have a full report on that. But I did say I would return to that story today, and I have. But I'm just going to hold off the coverage because I think hopefully on Monday we'll have some positive news. Now, of course, this relates to the accommodation of people arriving in this country, because many of you said, how come you can get a dinghy into Dover and you'll find a hotel room pretty swiftly, but you serve in Afghanistan and, well, we'll take you and your dog, but not your partner? It does seem strange. And so this is the pressure that we've heard. You remember about two military bases, one in Inverness and one in Sussex. You'll recall us talking about the situation in Crowborough and the government's plans to temporarily house close to 600 asylum seekers at that training camp. Last night, the locals made their feelings clear about that decision. At a meeting with Home Office officials, residents expressed their outrage. There were a number of heated exchanges, shouting matches erupting in the town's community centre. And LBC was there. Our South of England reporter, Benji Heyer, joins me now. Benji, how was it last night? And how's it looking this morning? Good morning.
Nick, good morning. There was an absolutely feverish atmosphere at the meeting last night in Crowborough, this leafy town turned hotbed of activism and opposition to the government's plan to temporarily house close to 600 asylum seekers at a nearby army training camp. Most people came to the gathering in good faith, but it didn't take long for the visceral anger to bubble up to the surface, with councillors heckled left, right and centre.
If there are questions that you disagree with the answers, that is entirely your right to do so, but it doesn't help to shout and insult them, okay? We'll get nowhere with it. So, at this point, I think it's only fair. I can't help you, sir, if you're going to do that. Pointing the fingers and standing is not going to help our situation here. Now, please listen to some of the answers or the questions that I know you want to put. I think at this point, sir, please sit down.
Nick, there was pretty much total unanimity amongst the Crowborough residents who attended last night. They want this proposal delayed or stopped entirely. They don't want hundreds of asylum seekers in their town of just 22,000 people. Those who vocally made their views heard highlighted safety and security concerns, the potential strain this could have on local resources, and they argued the site, which is about a mile away from the high street, is not fit for purpose. Kim Bailey runs Crowborough Shield, a group working to challenge and overturn the ban, the plan.
It's just not suitable. It's not suitable housing. There is asbestos that is all over that site. It's not an appropriate place to house 600 single men. You cannot have 600 men just wandering around these streets with nothing to do. It's wholly inappropriate. The Home Office are just not interested. They are implementing the government's policies at all costs and with no thought or regard for safety, risks or anything for anyone, whether that be the people that live in this community or the people that they're putting in these camps. They've just got no regard for anything. They're just implementing policy.
Well, Nick, two Home Office officials joined this meeting remotely to defend the policy and face a barrage of questions fired at them through the screen. One of those officials, the Director of Asylum Accommodation, Andrew Larter, he said he recognised the difficult impact this was having on the community, but he pointed, Nick, to precedent, another airbase, an RAF base, a facility in Essex, which has had about 800 asylum-seeking men on its site for 18 months now. And the council and the local services there, he said, are running effectively. So in other words, there's nothing to worry about. But he vowed nonetheless to feed back to the Home Secretary the feeling of the room in Crowborough. And boy, oh boy, was their feeling. Because when he defended the ability of asylum seekers to be able to freely come and go from the camp, because in his words, they are in the country lawfully, he was met with a chorus of derision, at times, frankly, abuse. Of course, this all relates to transferring asylum seekers to military sites, part of Labour's attempt to end the use of hotels before the next election. The government says it will deliver better outcomes for taxpayers, but a parliamentary committee last month did the maths and found that there wouldn't be a huge amount of savings, if any at all. In fact, it could cost even more to house the asylum seekers at military bases due to them needing to be converted. The Home Office says there will be a final decision on Crowborough imminently, but gave no specific move-in date. And the council, Wildin District Council, in effect said its hands were tied and not much could be done about it because the government is technically following the letter of the law.
LBC's Benji Hire reporting 12 after 8. Well, we picked up on the local mood. Some will know even better than that report, I suggest, is Nusrat Ghani, who's the Conservative MP for the area. Sussex Weald joins me now. I know it doesn't fall to you to say the answer, but, OK, they don't want these folk in Crowborough. Where should they be housed? Good morning to you.
Good morning. I mean, the challenge that we have is that the Crowborough site is what was previously assessed and rejected for a number of reasons. It's too small, it costs too much to adapt, it's in very close to a town and it's in the middle of a forest. And fundamentally, I have my cadets based there as well. Mm-hmm. So this site is seen as wholly inappropriate previously. And what was extraordinary about the meeting last night, which was badly managed by Wildin District Council, it was just bonkers. Because actually the Home Office came to my meeting on Monday when we had twice as many people present and it was actually absolutely fine because we talked about the process. Is that the Wildin District Council have not taken any legal action, which they can do because the Home Office has said that they can. You can take action before, during and after on grounds of planning. And even to get the assessment out from the Home Office, how they now deem the site to be safe, lawful and compliant, which the Home Office could not shed any light on yesterday. So we've got this really absurd situation where the Home Office can't even show us any of the assessments. We know they're going to have to make so much investment. It will cost no cheaper to put people in the Crowborough camp than it would in a hotel. They've made no provision for my cadets. And then we have a Rural District Council, because it's run by the Liberal Democrat and the Green Party, who can't get their act together to even put a letter before action in front of the Home Office to delay what's happening.
If you'll let me intervene, and I'm sorry to stop you in full flow, as it were. You say that Wealden District Council badly managed the meeting. In what way was it badly managed, in your view?
Well, look, I arrived at the meeting. I can't even explain the setup. We have this bizarre person comparing who wasn't local. All the officials, the councillors sitting on the stage like they've been, sort of hypnotised into not saying a single word. And we had a small screen with the Home Office. What people wanted to hear, like we had a discussion on Monday, is what is the process from the Home Office and what exactly is the Wealden District Council is doing. And the problem we have, Nick, is that the council have said there's nothing they can do, even though we've showcased and given them access to councils that have taken action in similar situations. On Monday, the council said that the two leaders, Jane Partridge and Rachel Millwood, said there's nothing we can do. At the end of my meeting, they said they would take legal action. 4 days later, they're still saying there's nothing they can do, because ideologically and politically, they don't want to challenge this. We do not understand why they won't work with the community, work with all the stakeholders to say, force the Home Office to show how they are meeting safe, legal and compliant, and how they've assessed this site to be safe, and take every legal action that we can to delay or prevent this happening.
Lastly, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I have to get to the news. I want to put this final question to you. To those who say, well, this is just NIMBYism by this MP and her constituents, how would you respond?
I think anybody would ask, if a decision like this was being taken, they'd want to see the assessment. I accept that people need to be housed in army camps. This is not an army camp. This is a training camp, which presently is home to the cadets. It is not like any other site in the country that houses asylum seekers. It's not a standalone site. There aren't three sets of perimeters. It is a very basic training camp that will cost hundreds of thousands of pounds to adapt, where people can walk through the forest and it's close to the town. In no way does it meet the requirements of a camp where asylum seekers can reside. If it did, it would have been assessed as appropriate previously.
Must leave it there. Nusrat Ghani, thank you. You're the Conservative MP for Sussex Weald, which has that area in your constituency. Coming up after the news, a related story, how we're going to hear, we understand, from the Home Secretary, changings to the ECHR, and you'll hear more from our political editor, Natasha Clark. 8:15, LBC News headlines now. Lottie Morley.
Downing Street has refused to deny reports the Chancellor will make a U-turn on income tax in the budget. The Shadow Health Secretary has told LBC the government needs to get a backbone when it comes to dealing with resident doctors. And the BBC says it won't be compensating Donald Trump after he threatened to sue the broadcaster for $1 billion. LBC weather, Storm Claudia bringing heavy rain and strong winds for most of England and Wales, highs of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the M1 southbound from Junction 10 at Luton Airport to 8 at Hemel Hempstead. It's following an accident and there are queues on the approach. Very busy on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 19 at Watford to 18 at Chorley Wood. And that's where a car's broken down. Long delays on the A12 northbound to Hackney Wick. There's been an accident. And in Upper Edmonton, Conduit Lane stays closed both ways. Now, the roads are very wet after all the heavy rain overnight and through this morning, so do take care as that surface road is reducing visibility, and also because of the bad weather, Avanti West Coast services to and from Euston are severely disrupted.
This is LBC.
With Little Plus, you can get something for everyone with 3 for $2 across our party time range. Bower buns, veggie spring rolls, pigs in blankets and more. All made to share. Now there's plenty more delicious reasons to keep the party going. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 26/11/25.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down.
Not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
This year,
Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts. And where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after it, we'll come to your reactions. Obviously, if you're living in and around Inverness, if you're living in and around Crowborough, you have major concerns about this. But this has got other aspects as well. Two front pages to share with you. The Metro talks about that one-in, one-out deal, with the reality being 113 have gone out. In total, people who've arrived, so if you'll allow, of course, some of those have been taken out, 8,011. But they're still saying that works. And in a related conversation, another front page, we also learned that Shabana Mahmood could force judges to prioritise public safety over the rights of illegal immigrants in a supposed crackdown that could be coming next week. Details on the latter of those two stories, LBC's political editor Natasha Clark, who exclusively revealed the Home Secretary, and these likely changes next week. So what is it you got on to, Natasha? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, it is happening next week. I'm told that on Monday, Shabana Mahmood is going to outline major changes to the way that the ECHR and the Modern Slavery Act essentially operate within our British law. So it's all part of this bid to try and deport more foreign criminals and illegal migrants even quicker. We know that so many of them, according to the government at least, are using our laws against us. The government's revealing today as well that nearly 50,000 foreign criminals have now been deported since Labour came to power last July. And the Home Secretary, I am told, is going to set up for a fresh fight with some Labour MPs. She says it's going to be the most sweeping reforms to tackle illegal migration in a generation. And ministers told me yesterday they think we are seen as a soft touch in Europe. They think asylum seekers are shopping around for the best place to try and get in. That you'll remember, of course, earlier this year, Yvette Cooper, when she was speaking to you, gave you details of this review of Article 3 and Article 8 of the European Convention on Human Rights. And we are told that she's going to confirm this on Monday. She's going to reform it. She's going to tweak parts of this to end what they call so-called abuse of the system. I spoke yesterday to the Migration Minister, Mike Tapp. He told me asylum seekers are shopping around for the best place to go.
What we see at the moment is abuse of the legal system. They're using it against us. That's unacceptable. We're really keen to make sure the ECHR is fit for purpose here.
But not leave it.
And well, we can't leave it because we've got trade deals, peace deals, and also returns deals that are underpinned by that. So we're making sure that domestically we do what we can to ensure that it's fair.
And Nick, I'm also told that she's going to announce tough new moves to copy parts of the Danish migration system. Last month, we learnt that she sent a team of officials over to Denmark to learn about how their system works, drawing lessons for ministers too. According to some statistics from their government, they apparently successfully remove and deport 95% of all rejected asylum seekers.
So what do the Danes know that we don't? What's going on there?
Well, exactly. So they have strict rules on family reunion, for example. So you can't bring anybody that's under the age of 24, so not working age children. Or sort of dependents.
Right.
Also, crucially, Nick, they restrict most refugees to a temporary stay in the country. So if you come over to Denmark and the country later says, actually, we've decided that Syria, that Iraq, Afghanistan or some other country, if we designate this as safe, you at some point have to go back. And I'm told that that is one of the things that Shabana Mahmood is really keen to say. Come over here, we will give you refugee status, we'll give you asylum, but once your country is designated safe again, we will therefore revoke that and expect you to go back to your own country. So I think that's going to please some people in Westminster that wants the government to, of course, go further and faster on migration. But others will say, well, are you not in hock to the Reform Party? Is this exactly what a Labour government should be doing, Nick? I think it's going to cause a fresh row.
OK, and just noting that in the past, the big row about doing anything with the ECHR is the charges that puts you on the same level as Russia or Belarus or whatever it might be.
She's unlikely to encounter a degree of opposition from some of her Labour colleagues here, isn't she, Natasha?
Exactly. This is going to cause a row amongst those people. Now, Mike Tapp told me, and you heard him just say there, we're not going to leave the ECHR. We've got peace deals for Northern Ireland. Peace deal is one of the main things that people in government say is the reason why we cannot leave the ECHR. And you're absolutely right. The criticism of it is, well, you know, people that are not in some of these international conventions, you're the likes of Vladimir Putin. But equally, there are people, the countries like Denmark, who have got their own carve-out options, who don't apply Article 3 and Article 8 of the ECHR in the same way domestically. And so they are saying, actually, there is a way to get a carve-out without leaving these conventions. We're still sticking to it, but actually making it far, far tougher for people to stay here and use our own laws as a means to avoid deportation.
And in a related question, final question, is there still love in the room for the one-in, one-out scheme? I refer you to the front page of the Metro today, which says we've managed to get 113 people out. We've allowed 84 in legally, but the total number of arrivals is 8,011. Yeah. I mean, the numbers just seem to make it farcical, Natasha.
Yeah, it's not a deterrent at the moment, is it? And when I spoke to Mike Tapp yesterday, the migration minister, he admitted to me that, you know, we've had two people now from the one-in, one-out scheme that have gone back to France and then come back in again. The first person has been deported. The Home Office confirmed that last week. Mike Tapp told me yesterday that the second one still hasn't been able to be deported. So clearly he is using some form of legal mechanisms to try to stay in this country. That is exactly what the Home Office fear is being used wide scale across the country for people to try and stay. And he said to me that they do want to expand this scheme. But at the moment, you're completely right. It's just a drop in the ocean, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. OK, LBC's political editor Natasha Clark, who filed that exclusive report, 8:24. Let's pick up on your calls on that. Mark in St Albans, is it the centres you want to go for or the one in, one out? Which do you want to focus on, Mark? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good to talk to you. Yeah, it's the centres. My idea would be to transport as soon as they're picked up off the boats, is to transport them to RAF Bryce Norton, hold them there, put them in a hangar at a holding centre, and then put them on the weekly flights down to supply flights down to the Falkland Islands. Now, that particular flight, it's not going down there. There's an island called Ascension Island.
There is.
Halfway down.
Yeah.
In the middle of the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, it would make an ideal place to process these migrants.
We're burning a lot of jet fuel, aren't we? I'm not saying your idea is wrong, but I don't know that's doing for our carbon footprint. Excuse me.
The flights go down there in any case. There are weekly flights by the Falkland Islands, so the flights go down there anyway. There's empty seats. I've done quite a few years in the military. I'm retired now.
Right.
And I used to go down to the Falklands on a regular basis to review some of the troops down there.
And lastly, conditions down there, I imagine, are pretty bleak, are they?
There's a small RAF base down there. There's a huge runway down there, so getting the flights in there is not a problem. It used to be an emergency runway when the space shuttle used to fly in case
it
they couldn't land.
It could take the space shuttle? It must be huge.
It's absolutely huge. It's a volcanic island. The weather's nice. It would make an ideal place. There's no way you could get off that island.
I'm quite warming to this idea, but what are they going to do all day?
Well, why not build some infrastructure? I hear they're all engineers and doctors and things like that, so they can form their own little community there. I tell you what, Nick, within a couple of weeks, when that gets known about, they would stop coming.
Thank you for your service, Mark. Interesting idea. Let's see what others make of it. 8:26. Now to other stories. This was the first of the offence that's been identified for the BBC. This was Panorama's transgression, the original.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women.
But once it went through the BBC propaganda machine, you heard...
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you, and we fight. We fight like hell.
If you think that was the sole offender, you're very wrong. We now learn we can take you to Newsnight. Again, first, the original.
We're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women, and we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them.
And this is after the editors have got hold of it.
We're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women, and we fight. We fight like hell.
Now, it has to be said, the former White House Chief of Staff under President Trump, Mick Mulvaney, was onto this. He was appearing on Newsnight when that clip was shown in 2022, and he criticised the edit.
Your video actually spliced together the presentation. He said, we're going to go down and we're going to cheer on our senators and our House members. And then it actually goes on to saying some of them we might not be able to. And that line about it, we fight and fight like hell, is actually later in the speech.
Let's bring to the conversation Katie Searle. Now, Katie was director of news programs at the BBC, is now head of opinion and insight at the I newspaper, and joins me now. Katie, thanks for coming on. I've got to ask you, and I know that you wrote a piece talking about the employment you had at the BBC. Is this the corporation you recognise from your dealings? Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you, Nick. And, yeah, it's really interesting to listen back to those clips. Look, I think, before I get into that, I think the problem here, having two of these examples, is just it allows an accusation that there is a culture of bias. And that's the real problem with it, not really the individual issues here or the individual programmes. It really does look like there's a pattern there. And what I'd like to say and what I've been writing about really is that you've got to remember that the vast majority of journalists at the BBC are impartial. I really, truly believe that. However, I do think there are huge lessons here. And I would say the number one job for the next DG and head of news has got to be resetting and reaffirming that reputation for impartiality. I mean, there's no doubt, Nick, that the last few days have been unbelievably damaging for the BBC. But I do think, you know, there's a little bit of kind of just hold our breath for a moment and remember that the whole institution is not riddled with people trying to do the wrong thing, which at times it's become a little bit hysterical, in my view. And that actually, you know, the BBC pumps out hours and hours and hours of content all over the world, incredibly well, and day in, day out, people go in to do impartial journalism, not to make damaging mistakes that these are, no doubt are.
Katie, how much is this almost a product of without them realising that something called groupthink, in that by and large, not wholly, but by and large, people are seen to be recruited from roughly the same pool?
Yeah, I do think recruitment is an issue. I agree with that. And I think the BBC needs to be really sort of step back and look at how they recruit and who they recruit. And I think also, by the way, I think it's fair to say that many, many media companies come from the kind of essentially what we call the metropolitan elite, which is people from big cities and tend to have similar views. So what the BBC needs to do really is look much wider and much deeper about who they're recruiting and also, you know, encourage that diversity of thought. And I think, you know, there has been, not just at the BBC, but over, you know, lots of different media organisations, a surprise at the growth of Reform, as we know, politically, but also in commentary. And, you know, really getting to a culture where those views are not repelled, but absolutely accepted and encouraged. And until that, you know, the culture won't change. And I think, by the way, I would also say that, let's remember, this is not about two clips of Trump. It's just not. And I'm not playing down the problems with those clips. You know, they were genuine problems. But I do think it's worth saying, and looking at the press court report, that actually it covers a range of issues from not only Trump, but the Middle East, to the trans debate. And that is the real problem. That is about culture, and culture-wide, to your point, Lenny.
Katie, thanks for your time this morning. Katie Searle was director of news programmes at the BBC, now head of opinion and insight for the I newspaper. It's 8:31. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. Newstime, Lottie Morley.
Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy has told Nick she will stand by Rachel Reeves ahead of her budget. Downing Street has refused to deny reports the Chancellor will drop plans to increase income tax late this month. Thousands of resident doctors are beginning a five-day strike across England this morning. It's part of a long-running dispute over pay and jobs. Health Secretary Wes Streeting will be taking your calls here on LBC in the next half an hour. And the BBC is awaiting a response from Donald Trump after apologising for editing a speech of the US President. The corporation has admitted the clipped panorama footage was misleading, but it's rejected paying compensation as he threatens to sue for $1 billion. LBC weather, storm Claudia bringing heavy rain and strong winds for most of England and Wales, highs of 16 degrees.
on the latest episode of The News Agents.
The latest disclosures from the Epstein emails and the dotted line that links him ever more closely to Donald Trump.
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Veterans like me, we all have a story. This is Tommy's. Once there was a courageous soldier called Tommy. But when his service ended, Tommy's battles began. His world was stripped away, and he returned home with storms in his heart and shadows in his mind. Tommy felt isolated and alone. Until your words of support led him to Help for Heroes. Now he can start a new chapter. One full of hope, purpose and belonging. Help veterans start their next chapter this Christmas. Send your message at helpforheroes.org.uk.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
You know how fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because sound is the most effective way to tell the players they're rubbish. Works in advertising too. Because when you amplify your advertising using radio, your campaign is 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:34, we'll return to our conversation about migration. There's two centres, one in Crowborough in Sussex, one up in Inverness in Scotland. And the idea that there will be a change is revealed exclusively here on LBC by Natasha Clark from Shabana Mahmood, the Home Secretary, as to our exactly the rules and interpretation of the ECHR. But let's go to other matters and policing matters. And when these were introduced on, as I recall, David Cameron's watch, at the time I said I didn't think they were much cop. And I challenged him, and I challenged the then Home Secretary, Theresa May, that the idea of these police and crime commissioners just didn't really gel. People just wanted more police officers. They didn't want necessarily a politically elected commissioner. Well, they stuck with it and with it and with it. But I'm delighted to tell you now that they will be scrapped by the Labour government in an attempt to save tens of millions of pounds, which perhaps we actually provide more police officers. Which would you rather have in your area? Let's go to Liam Gotting, LBC's North West reporter, who's been asking the people of Merseyside what they know about their police and crime commissioner. Liam, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, there are 41 of these police and crime commissioners across England and Wales, earning between £73 and £100,000 a year. The role was first created back in 2012 by the Conservative and Lib Dem coalition government. Here's the then Home Secretary, Theresa May, heralding the role at the time.
The Police and Crime Commission will be visible and accessible. They've been elected and they will be accountable to the public. This is about being a voice for local people in policing. It's about working with the Chief Constable to set the priorities within the budget.
Well, as we were hearing there from Theresa May, they are actually directly elected officials. And the last elections for Merseyside's Police and Crime Commissioner was just last year. But judging by the 23% turnout, it doesn't seem many people knew that that was the case. And Policing Minister Sarah Jones told the House of Commons yesterday that only three in five people are aware that they even exist. So I decided to test the people of Birkenhead on the Wirral this morning, asking them first if they know who their Police and Crime Commissioner is.
No.
I'm not sure.
Not really, no.
I know what a chief superintendent does, but I wouldn't have a clue what the crime commissioner does. Probably very well paid.
We're just asking people if you've ever heard of a job title called a police and crime commissioner before. Is that something you've ever heard of?
I know the title.
I don't know what they are, really.
Well, I've heard all three words. I don't know if I've heard all three words put together.
Do you know what they do?
No, not properly.
They have an oversight of the police. Yeah, I have heard of it, yeah. God knows what they do.
Well, Nick, the answer is that Emily Spurrell is Merseyside's Police and Crime Commissioner. And she's not just Merseyside's PCC, but she's also the chair of the Association of Police and Crime Commissioners. A statement from Ms. Spurrell says that we are deeply disappointed by the decision and the lack of engagement with us, and adds that abolishing PCCs as police face a crisis of public trust and confidence risks creating a dangerous accountability vacuum.
Liam Gotting reporting to Donna Jones, who's Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, and I have to say it's always been helpful with interviews with policing matters down the years, and joins me now. Commissioner, why did this idea fail to ignite the interest of the public, do you imagine? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, I think it's like everything, isn't it? I think it's when, you know, a new role is brought in, particularly an elected role where you're asking people to go out and actually do something, i.e. vote. It does need quite a lot of marketing, advertising, and I just don't think the government put enough prep into that back in November 2012 when we had those first inaugural elections of police and crime commissioners. Having said that, I do think the work that my colleagues have done over the last 13 years across the country has been very good. And, you know, when we had that
In what way, Commissioner?
Well, okay, so before you had a police and crime commission, let me just take my own area, Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, 2.2 million people. Before there was a me, there were 28 councillors that sat on a police authority board. They were paid £10,000 each a year, so that was 280 grand. And the governance of the police, the whole police service, over £500 million worth of spending in my area, was done by a panel of councillors that came together for half a day once a month. I can tell you, policing is complex when you're looking at things like governance of life, facial recognition, when you're looking at the spending of £500 million, and you're looking at forensic commercial contracts, all of the things that I get involved in. I'm in charge of the whole of the police estate, every police car, the procurement of buying vehicles, everything that's commercial comes under me. You cannot do that if you are a panel of 28 councillors that comes together for 3 or 4 hours once a month. And, you know, the chief constable, when you look at what's happened in the Met, that recent announcement from four or five weeks ago, that panorama with the shocking stuff that's been going on across policing, we've got lots of, you know, chief constables that are currently suspended or under investigation, you know, being sacked. Actually, the governance of police and crime commissioners has been incredibly important.
But hang on, you and your colleagues have been in post for 13 years. So all these chief constables who are being suspended or in some instances being dismissed, they've been working commissioners for more than a decade, Commissioner.
Yes, they have. But do you think they would have... I don't think it does. I think it's quite the reverse.
Hang on,
so you
approve the appointment of chief constables who then get suspended, and that's a success story, is it?
No, I think what's a success story is that if you have the chief constable who's done something wrong, they are held to account. Do I think that happened as much as it did before we had police and crime commissioners? The answer to that is no. Now, look, Nick, I don't want to come on here and defend this. I want to explain to you my position, if you don't mind. I actually am slightly ambivalent about the announcement yesterday. And the reason why, if I can just explain that, is because this is not really new news. The government made an announcement after the general election last year. They wanted all of England covered by a devolved mayoral devolution deal. And they said very clearly, where the coterminous boundary of the police and crime commissioner is the same as the mayor, we will be getting rid of the PCC and rolling it into a mayor, like an Andy Burnham type person. I'm not going to mention Sadiq Khan because that's not a good example. But, you know, as an Andy Burnham, who most people would agree has been an effective figurehead for his sub-region. And he's got the powers of policing governance, and that's worked well. So because we're going to have these mayors, like in my area, I don't think you need a me elected and a mayor elected. We would bump into each other. Right. So that's why I'm sort of, broadly supportive of the direction here.
Finally, if the figures tell the story, and I hear what you say, when it was first started in 2012, the overall turnout was 14.7%, the lowest 12% of people turned out in the West Midlands. And the most recent, the overall turnout has grown a little, 23.2%. It's still fewer than one in four. I'm sorry to be brutal. People don't care. Real people don't care, Commissioner.
Yeah, and that's why I get the government's announcement. I spoke to Shabana Mahmood about this last year before the general election, and I understand what they're doing. The key thing here for me is victims' voices, victim services, holding the police to account. There is a lot going on in policing at the moment. It is very complex, and we do need that oversight outside. We can't have the police marking their own homework. That's why their alternative model of moving to this mayoral model is something that I think will work. I have a concern where they won't be having having mayors for a few years, and therefore they're going to go back to that councillor panel. That's just going to will weaken the system significantly. Where I do,
I will leave it there, Donna Jones. I have to leave it there. Thank you, your Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. I'm sure we'll be talking policing matters, because it's a few years away before, of course, all this is stood down. 8:42 is the time. Diana's in Beverley. Diana, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. The Police Crime Commissioner.
Yeah.
Last time when I got my thing through the letterbox, I went up, put a big cross where it said, don't know who he is, for waste of money. So I thought, that sealed that one out. And then it was previous to that, I had an issue, an ongoing issue, complaining about something to the police about something that was going on. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't happy, so I wrote to the Police and Crime Commissioner. I really can't remember what it was now, though.
Right.
But you know what? I got a letter back saying that wasn't within his remit. I thought, well, what do you do then? What do you do, mate?
But you can't quite remember. Just so I can clarify, you can't quite remember what the issue was, but she decided not to get involved.
Yeah, it was a he. It wasn't with him what he does. And I thought, well, what do you do then? I haven't got a clue. I've not got a clue.
Have you ever heard anything positive from any of your friends or neighbours in Yorkshire? Have you ever heard anything positive about what he's done from any of your friends or neighbours in Yorkshire?
No, because nobody speaks about him, because it's like Batman. He just hides. Batman was there.
Commissioner Gordon. Do you remember in the Batman movies? Commissioner Gordon. Well remembered, Diana. Thank you for that. Tried to contact them. Utterly hopeless. Simon in Shearwater. Simon, what do you want to say about... You're going back to Crowborough, aren't we, in the barracks? You have concerns about that. Good morning to you.
Yes. I mean, a lot of it's all down to cost. The people are very angry about the cost. And...
Are you very angry about the cost?
Well, it is costing us, but I'm a bit puzzled because these asylum seekers use this ECHR, European Court
Convention
of Human
Rights,
Convention of Human Rights. Right. So they come here and they quote this, and we say, okay, you can use that. So they've come from a European bloc, France, but a European bloc. Mm. So under that EU law, that European Court of Human Rights Act, there will be money set aside, like free legal, you know. So we should be putting a claim against the EU for every migrant that uses that technicality.
Well, that's just spinning everyone's wheels, isn't it? They're not going to do it.
Why not? The money's there.
But you know the European...
The money's there.
You know the European Union's not going to make the payments. Britain would just make itself look stupid by doing that. You're not going to get anywhere.
Well, no. We've taken the problem.
Find out what they're doing in Denmark? Isn't that the solution? Denmark, 95% plus people are successfully deported.
Here,
don't we want to learn from that?
Once they're here, the cost is a major, major, major issue for us in our current climate. Mm-hmm. Now, the EU, right, they turn around and say, well, like the French say, it's your problem. Well, then, I'm sorry, you're going to have to pay it.
All right. Simon, it's an idea. I don't think it would even get off the ground. The European Union, I doubt they'd even accept the emails. They would just send them straight back because, as I see your expression, you are just spinning. They are not going to pay. But, Simon, let's see what others make of your idea. And if you're talking about money, what about the valuation of £1 million for, literally, and that's literally no abuse word, a pile of old rope.
Some piles of rope are being sold as art for £1 million. I'm LBC's Helen Hodnott at the dockyard, seeing if I too can get money for old rope.
Not she did a damn fine job in limited time. You can check it out on the LBC app or lbc.co.uk, and you'll hear her report after this. It's 8:46, LBC News headlines read by Lottie Morley.
Downing Street has refused to deny reports the Chancellor will drop plans to increase income tax in the budget. Thousands of resident doctors are beginning a 5-day strike across England this morning. And the BBC is awaiting a response from Donald Trump after apologising for editing a speech of the US President. LBC weather, storm Claudia bringing heavy rain and strong winds for most of England and Wales. Highs of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 in two places. Firstly, anti-clockwise, it's slow to junction 25 at the A10. That's where a lorry's broken down. And then anti-clockwise, it's very busy from junction 20 at Kings Langley to 19 at Watford after a car broke down earlier. The roads are very wet after all the heavy rain, so do take extra care. Lots of surface spray around, reducing visibility. And in Upper Edmonton, Conduit Lane remains closed both ways. On the underground, no service for the Piccadilly line between Rain Lane and Uxbridge. Severe delays on the Central Line. Also severe delays on the Mildmay Line between Wilson Junction and Clapham Junction. And Avanti West Coast are running a reduced service to and from Euston.
This is LBC.
This Saturday, the £15 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
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 Yes, the Lotto jackpot must be won this Saturday. What are you waiting for? Get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello, and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10 to 9, just tell you what's coming up. Of course, Health Secretary Wes Streeting here just after 9, taking your calls on particularly health matters and possibly other things you might wish to discuss with him. And we'll come back to our conversation about the scrapping. Hooray! Great move by the Labour government. Yes, you did hear that correctly. I'll repeat it. Great move by the Labour government to scrap PCCs. Gavin, you'll be the next caller on that. Now, they reckon that's going to save somewhere in the region of north of £20 million a year. But if you're talking about things that are worth money... A Turner Prize nominated artist has put up a pile of old rope for sale for £1 million. Artist David Shrigley is going to go on display here in London soon. Now, he's a Turner Prize nominated artist. It will showcase huge piles of old rope he's gathered from his travels across the country with that extraordinary price tag. So I decided to send LBC's Helen Hoddenott to... Well, where do you find rope? You find rope where there are ships. Where do you find ships? The historic dockyard in Chatham, Kent, to have a go at making her own rope masterpiece.
I'm in something of a rope hall of fame, a huge factory on the banks of the Thames, which has been making rope for over 400 years, hoping a big pile of it might make me a millionaire.
My name's David Cheer.
And I've been a rope maker for 26 years. The building's been here since 1791. Obviously, we made all the rope for the Victory. There is a possibility that Nelson could have walked on these floors. There's other things we make rope for TVs and film sets. I personally made some nets for the Gladiator 2 film. We've even made teething rings for tigers.
The artist David Shrigley spent 8 months gathering 10 tons of old rope from places like seaports, climbing schools and offshore wind farms before cleaning and assembling it for its new life as artwork.
My name's Alex Rowling. I'm the managing director of the Master Rope Makers here in the Chetham Historic Dockyard. Making art with rope is not a new thing. We've worked with a lot of artists. We had a lady who did it with some gold fibres. Another lady made rope and then dragged it through the river to collect the stuff that was in there.
I have 15 minutes rather than 8 months, but staff here have kindly agreed to let me use the offcuts in the factory to create my own rope masterpiece to rival David Shrigley's. So I'm going to start with some slightly bigger ropes to make up a bit more of the base. Okay, so this is going to be heavy. This is so, oh my god, it's so much rope. Okay, this is perfect. Stuart has just handed me another piece of rope with a gorgeous frayed end. It's got a really nice kind of maneuverability, this piece of rope. The others have been a bit stiffer, but that one's stunning. This looks like a man with a scarf on, with a really big winter scarf. David Shrigley has described his million-pound price tag as a provocation and said he'd be surprised if someone bought it. But I have more confidence in mine.
I'd say there's £100 there, because it's used rope.
Would you like to buy it for £100?
I have my own rope, thank you very much.
My name's Nikki. I am a tour guide for the ropery, and I enjoy my job thoroughly.
How much would you pay for my rope, man?
I think it's very good. I think a good £250.
Oh, brilliant. It's going up. We also asked the public if they'd spend £1 million on David Shrigley's pile of rope.
I would go for David. It's a bit more rope.
I would choose this one too. It looks like a pile of spaghetti.
It looks like something that I might center a room around.
Or mine.
David's just a pile of ropes and that's got more structure to it.
That one is better and the colour even makes £2,000.
Probably Helen's. I don't know, that's a bit of an eyesore. Or is that one's all right? Takes up less space.
No ropey old work there from Helen Hoddernott reporting for LBC from Chatham Dockyard. Now go to the LBC app or lbc.co.uk to see her artwork. And of course, then you can compare and contrast. I think she did pretty well. Let's come back to the idea of the PCCs and their exit. Gavin's in Worcester. Gavin, are you celebrating? I am. Good morning.
I certainly am, Nick. Yesterday was a terrific day for the taxpayer, and we don't get to say that sentence very often.
I agree with you.
You may remember me, Nick. I was the guy who had a guitar stolen and West Mercia police did nothing about it.
I do, yeah. I'd forgotten that. Yes, I do remember that story. Yep, yep.
There you go. So the Police and Crime Commissioner's Office was involved in my case. So a very brief recap is I solved the case twice. I told the police where it was and they couldn't be bothered to knock a door.
That's right.
I contacted the Police and Crime Commissioner's Office on multiple occasions about this and the only response I got from them was, we're sorry that we haven't solved your crime, but we're not going to solve your crime. And if you remember, I actually then ended up suing West Mercia Police, but lost because of a quirk of the law saying they weren't obliged to actually investigate this case. Well, if they aren't, then who is? And the PCCs should be holding people's feet to the fire. In my region in West Mercia, vehicle theft is currently running at around 4.73% of the amount of cases reported being resolved. Our PCC recently put up a social media post, which, by the way, seems to be all he's interested in doing, about saying how he'd managed to secure a monumental amount of money for victims of fraud, £20,000 to cover the entire region. I am going to work out what that comes out to per head and point that out to him, because I have ordered last night when I went online, ordered him a lovely leaving card, and I'm going to be sending that to him. Don't bump your bum on the door on the way out.
Strong views from Gavin, who's celebrating the saving of all that cash. Thank you, Gavin. It's 4 minutes before nine. Maria's in Reigate. You're not so jubilant at the news. Is that right? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Good morning. Yeah, not really. I mean, I think following Gavin's call, this is another, it's a situation of you get a good one and you get a bad one. We in Surrey have the fantastic Lisa Townsend as our police crime commissioner, and she was voted in 2021 and has done amazing things.
Tell
for
me some
women's
of the amazing
rights.
Things she's done.
Well, when she arrived, her inbox was full of women complaining, about women's safe spaces. And so she has fought the many cases going on at the moment for women to have their own spaces. And she is very, very, very engaged with that. And also,
which is important, but shouldn't she be tackling shop theft and everything else?
Yes, and she does. And she does do that. So when she first took office, Gavin Stevens was our chief constable, and in my opinion, was fairly dreadful. And he now heads up the National Police Chiefs Council. We now have a much better Surrey Police, but they are still woeful in some of their failings. And if we don't have someone who is looking at them from an independent perspective and challenging them, we are stuck with a police force marking their own homework again.
All right. I have just looked up the clear-up, what's called the clear-up rate for Surrey Police. It's better than some. It's still 11.8%, so perhaps I would argue it's not as well as it should be. But, Marie, I have to leave it there before I want to get to the news early. We're going to take an early news. My grateful to Adam and to Brooke and to others who've pointed out, and to Richard, that, of course, chat, and you're hearing from a man, by the way, who was born in Kent, so my apologies, I didn't hear the report. Apparently my colleague said that the Chatham Dockyard is by the River Thames. Of course it's not, it's the River Medway, and you don't need to tell me the significance of the River Medway, because that decides whether you are a Kentish man or a man of Kent, so apologies for that, it was, of course, the Medway. Your calls to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, will follow the latest LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, Downing Street has refused to deny reports the Chancellor will drop plans to increase income tax in the budget. Sir Keir Starmer is said to be concerned that breaking a manifesto pledge with the hike would lead to a backlash. Editor-in-chief of City AM, Christian May, has told Nick Rachel Reeves would have to find the money elsewhere, though.
Ministers are perfectly entitled to change their ideas after they've assessed the impact. A less generous view, or I would suggest a more accurate view, is that it's complete chaos. We know the political situation in Number 10 is febrile, and we know that the Chancellor still has around £30 billion of tax rises to find. If she says she's not going to find that by raising income tax, I'm afraid it puts all sorts of other taxes back on the table.
Thousands of resident doctors have gone on strike across England in a row over pay. The Health Secretary has accused the British Medical Association of acting like cartel. Deputy Chair of the BMA Council, Dr. Emma Runswick, has told Nick the system is broken.
This year, 20,000 doctors turned away from jobs, 30,000 applicants for 10,000 jobs for progression to become the consultants and GPs that we need in the future. You'll see across the press this morning, we've got several examples of people who are having to pick up just shifts when there is sickness, a couple of people who are literally on job seekers. This is an absolutely outrageous situation when patients are waiting for appointments and in corridors. And we can do better than this as a society, as a health service.
Health Secretary Wes Streeting is about to take your calls here on LBC. The BBC says it won't be compensating Donald Trump after he threatened to sue the broadcaster for $1 billion. The organisation has apologised to the US president for a clip that made it look like he'd incited violence on the night of the Capitol riots. Ministers have announced new rules for landlords will be brought in May next year. The Renters' Rights Act will prevent bidding wars between prospective tenants. It will also stop landlords from evicting their tenants without a reason. And Storm Claudia is bringing torrential rain to parts of England and Wales today. The Met Office says we could see power cuts and damage to buildings. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 111 points at 96.95. The pound buys $1.32 and a €1.13. LBC weather, Storm Claudia bringing heavy rain and strong winds for most of England and Wales. Bright with some sunshine in Scotland, highs of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Christmas is coming. You're either hosting the crowds at home.
They'll be here any minute.
Or driving to guest at the in-laws. Streaming movies in the front room or cartoons in the backseat. Prepping the party playlist or making your way on maps.
Rerouting again.
So whether you're hosting or guesting, you need the UK's best mobile network and broadband technology. EE does more.
UK's best network. RootMetrics data H125. Full fibre is the UK's most reliable broadband technology. Ofcom's broadband terminology research, March 2023. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Put your questions to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, now. Call 0345 6060 973.
2 minutes after nine, Friday, November the 14th, and yes, the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is in the studio and ready to take your calls. Just a quick one from me before we get to the first caller. Niraj, you're the first caller. You've been up to much lately, Mr. Streeting?
It's been a quiet week, Nick. it's been a bit of a mixed bag. I mean...
Well, it is mixed news, because you told me, in opposition, you would get the waiting list down.
Mm.
And you have delivered. And yeah. That's no mean feat. And I mean this, congratulations. Well done to you and your colleagues. But we're talking when the residents' doctors are on strike again,
absolutely, which is obviously going to set us back. And it is frustrating. I mean, yesterday I was able to stand in front of the country and say the NHS is finally on the road to recovery. Waiting lists are coming down. Ambulance response times are about 10 minutes faster this time this year than this time last year. And patient satisfaction with GPs is on the up. Now, lots done, a lot more to do, but at least we can say it's finally going in the right direction. So when the resident doctors are now out on strike again, not only are they harming patients and causing unnecessary disruption, they're also threatening to set back that recovery, which isn't just bad for patients, it's bad for them, so they're shooting themselves in the foot. And what really frustrates me about this dispute is that it comes after a 28.9% pay rise for resident doctors, the highest in the public sector 2 years in the row. Now, that's not everything they've asked for, obviously, but I think by any estimation, I mean, how many people listening this morning can say they've had a 28.9% pay rise?
But the other aspect is, of course, jobs, isn't it? So let's get
right.
A resident doctor in directly to challenge you. Thank you for that, right. And we'll be talking about... Niraj is in Harrow, and you're through to the Health Secretary. Niraj, go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning, and good morning, Health Secretary.
Good morning.
So my question is fairly simple. It's why should we as resident doctors believe that you value us, and why should we take you seriously when the proposals that you've put forward to end industrial action are simply what anybody would expect from a reasonable employer, and that should already be in place? So I mean things like funding our mandatory exams and portfolio and college fees, and ensuring that there are enough training places to make sure that the public have enough consultants in the future. So all of those things, in my opinion, should already be in place. There shouldn't be a bargaining chip to try to end this dispute.
So I'd say a couple of things in response, Niraj. Firstly, you're right, things aren't good enough for resident doctors, but all those things you've listed, they haven't happened before, and I'm proposing that they should happen now. I came in and one of the very first things that I did as Health Secretary was settle the previous dispute with the previous government. And as a result of decisions I've taken, you and your profession have had a 28.9% pay rise. We've also, on those things you've listed, we've also taken steps to bring forward the availability of training places. So I'm hoping to be able to release an extra 1,000 specialty training places during this application round, additional to the 1,000 that I'd already promised over the coming few years.
But this only scratches the surface, Mr. Streeting. The 10-year NHS plan, published, as you all know, in the summer, pledged an extra 1,000 training places by 2028. But there were more than 30,000 applications for 10,000 jobs this year. That's the ratio of 3 to 1.
So two-thirds of those, Nick, are international medical graduates who are applying. And one of the things that I'm doing is putting an end to the absurdity where homegrown talent are having to compete for the same training places on equal terms against people who've trained overseas. I think it's crackers. I think it's unfair to our own doctors. I also think it doesn't help this country with unmanageable levels of net migration. So I'm working as fast as I can on
when
that.
When would that the be, Mr.
Well, hopefully that will be by 2027, but I'm actually looking at whether I can do something much more urgently. But the challenge there is the law. That's the complexity. But I'm going
Why is it the law? It seems ridiculous. We've got a ratio of 3 to 1. And imagine if you were able to announce to the public... We're just going to put another 15,000 doctors on the books.
Yeah,
you would hear the cheering from inside the studio.
Watch this space. The other thing I'd say is...
What do you mean by watch this space?
Well, because I'm going as fast as I can to deal with this issue of international medical graduates. I don't think it's right or fair. The challenge is a legal one. I'm looking at whether there are things I can do more quickly, but it is
this so-called bottleneck last year on this? There's one doctor, Jacob McSweeney, who's featured in the Daily Mirror today. He talks about there being 20,000 young doctors cannot get permanent jobs because they, quote, bottleneck in the pipeline.
So this is the training places. So when you are training to become a doctor and you want to move into a specialty, there are these things called specialty training places. We've got large numbers of doctors coming out of medical school. That is a good thing. But we also want them to be able to go into a wide range of specialties across the NHS, and there aren't sufficient training places. That's why I'm releasing 1,000 more in this application round. If I can move more quickly on that, it's not helped by the fact that these strikes cost us around $250 million every time they're out. So again,
well, let's get Niraj back in.
Again, this is self-defeating action. But Niraj, yes, the more you do this stuff, the less money I have to spend on improving your lives, your working lives, and also patients.
A quick response to the health secretary, Niraj.
Of course, if I could come back on that, 2 points. Of course, we all care about patient safety. None of us wants to be on strike. I would rather be at work today. The first thing is, on the things that you have put forward and put on the table, we know that the implementation of these changes would probably be fraught with challenges. For example, the last time we made a settlement with you for exception report reform, the actual implementation of those changes took a very long time, and I think that squandered a lot of goodwill from this government. And on the specialty training places, we do understand UK prioritisation and the international medical graduate issue. Most other countries prioritise their homegrown medical graduates, but what we have been doing is increasing the number of medical schools and increasing the number of doctors who are being pumped out of those medical schools. So regardless of the fact that we're going to stem international migration and stem international medical graduates coming into the NHS, we are still generating far more doctors than there are places. And in addition to that, there are other workforce concerns, for example, physician assistants and ACPs taking doctor jobs. Okay. And I think that's something that needs to be talked about a bit more.
And here's the thing. On every single one of those fronts, on pay, on specialty training places, on improvements to conditions, I have been working to address every single one of those issues. These are not the conditions in which people go out on strike. Strike should be a last resort. And I'm sorry, but when you say, I don't want to be out on strike today, yes, you do, because you have made that choice. You have done so having had a 28.9% pay rise, the highest in the public sector 2 years in a row. And on those things that you've just mentioned, you say they take time. Yes, they do, because it is complicated. So to hold patients to ransom and to be out on strike setting back the NHS because you don't think we're going fast enough and because the leadership of your union are not honest enough that some of this change takes time is extremely irresponsible. It is extremely unnecessary. And the other listeners to this show who have not had a 28.9% pay rise, whose taxes are paying for our National Health Service and who are receiving a substandard service, not least because of the damage that these rounds of industrial action are doing, I think they will be quite shocked, actually, that against the backdrop of a health secretary that wants to work with you, who acknowledges these are challenges and wants to address them, and has given you the biggest pay rise in the public sector 2 years in a row, I think people will be shocked by the BMA's reprehensible behaviour. So don't tell me you don't want to be out on strike, because that's exactly where you are. You made that choice, own it, and own the damage it will do to your patients.
A one-sentence response, Niraj.
I hope that your attitude to this whole industrial action, I hope that you change your attitude on it. Right. You listen to doctors on the ground.
Okay, grateful for that.
Let me say, Nick, I'll tell you where doctors on the ground are, because it's on the front page of the Times.
Oh, we both reached for the same one. Go ahead.
I'll tell you where doctors are. Most junior doctors, it says here, I'd call them resident doctors, do not support today's strike, a poll has revealed.
The BMA says it's a very small poll, Mr. Street.
Well, the BMA, I tell you what, if the BMA don't agree with the opinion poll, they should have had the courage to put the offer I made to them to their members. I don't believe the BMA are speaking for their members. I think they're speaking for their activists. Those activists are damaging the NHS's recovery, disrupting patients' lives, and they need to own the consequences of their actions.
Finally, is the BMA more a political than it is a medical organisation now, Mr.
Yes, it is no longer a professional association, and it is engaged in cartel-like behaviour.
Let's go to other matters. Niraj, thank you for your work. Welcome to you back to your hospital when you get there. Nora is on the Wirral. Nora, your question to Wes Streeting. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Streeting.
Good morning.
I the Michelle Moan situation, and it was commendable that they got a court ruling where the money was going to be paid back, because nobody ever thought that would happen. However, the deadline was the 15th of October. Barrowman's now claiming insolvency, gone out of business, and he's not going to pay. If they owe $122 million for the contract that was faulty, the equipment that was faulty, plus they now owe $39 million in tax. They didn't even pay tax on it.
Right.
And then they're not, how are you going to go about getting it now? Because it's
I think we're talking about total somewhere in the region of £150 million once you allow for interest. Can you give us an update? Are we any closer to getting that cash back, Mr. Streeting?
We're going after it. I have to be careful about what I say, Nick, because if I say too much about what we're doing and how we're doing it, that gives Baroness Moan's legal team some insight that I'd rather they didn't have. But suffice to say, this is such a disgraceful state of affairs. And ripping off the taxpayer in any circumstances is unacceptable. But thinking about that context of a pandemic, a national emergency, where there were people who were going out to work, putting themselves in harm's way against a deadly virus for which there was no vaccine, no treatment at the time, that kind of selfless action to try and help our country through stands in stark contrast to people who saw an opportunity
to
line their
own pockets.
Your
resolve is as hard, as determined as ever.
Absolutely.
To get this cash back. You can
tell my listeners
that. I think
it's disgraceful. And honestly, Baroness Moan, I mean, the clue's in the title, a member of the House of Lords, no less. She shouldn't need to be dragged through the courts. She should do the right thing and pay that money back.
Nora, thank you for your call. Daniel's in Golders Green. You're through to Wes Streeting. Go ahead, Daniel. Morning to you.
Morning. Good morning, Nick. And good morning, Health Secretary.
Good morning.
Wes, given rumours of a coup this week, can we still trust the Prime Minister? And does he have control over No. 10 Downing Street and his Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney?
Yes, I think you can. I mean, look, it's... I did wake up yesterday morning feeling like I'd been in some sort of fever dream, reflecting on this week's events. It was quite bizarre. But this is also a week in which, as we've just been saying, NHS waiting lists are falling.
Now, the Prime Minister phoned you, apparently. Was it the night before last?
Yeah, but I'm not telling you anything is the
answer
to this.
Can you just give me his tone? His tone in the conversation.
Oh, look, it's as nice as usual.
Was it mildly apologetic? Sorry you've been dragged through all of this.
I think, to be honest, I think the Prime Minister and I are both in the same boat here of being extremely frustrated because this is a total distraction. And I just sort of say, you know, the season finale of the Traitors is over.
Yep.
And it's time we focused on the news.
I'm glad you know.
The news is good news this week.
We've had two pictures mocked up, two different looks of Joe Marler, one with the beanie and one with the sort of distinctive Mohican. Which one have you done as both?
You'll have to let me take that away because particularly the one with the beanie, I've now realised how much I look like my little brother.
Quickly, get a picture of the young Streeting. Lastly on that, do you still have confidence in the Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney?
Of course I do. I've always got on. I get on well with everyone, Nick. I'm a very amenable person, as you know.
But even
with the BMA, I tend to be more amenable than sometimes.
So the relationship moves on. All the talk is nonsense. But one day you might want to be Prime Minister.
Oh, I'm very happy doing the job that I'm doing, to be honest. And
we'll just take you back to 2018.
Why did I agree to do this?
Unspun with Matt. This or Matt Ford? Which one is it? Where various Labour MPs are asked who they think would be Prime Minister in 10 years' time.
The leader of the Labour Party.
Another Conservative.
Jeremy Corbyn.
Jeremy Corbyn.
Jeremy Corbyn.
Jeremy Corbyn, of course.
Anyone but Jeremy Corbyn.
Liz Haig.
Bridget Phillipson.
Any old bloody Labour woman I'll take.
Undoubtedly Kemi Badenoch.
Gavin Williamson.
Amber Morris.
Rees-Mogg. How about that?
I think it'd probably be me.
And we concluded with a long list of very big political names. So you knew this all those years ago, did you?
As has often been said, it will be my sense of humour that will ultimately do for me one day. But if you don't bat yourself, who will? That's my advice to the kids in my constituency. But no, I mean, there are times where you say things in jest and then you're sat on a radio programme taking calls, thinking you're going to discuss the serious issues of the day, and Ferrari comes along with a drive-by. Thank you very much. This is, I knew I should stick to Sheila Fogarty. She doesn't do this.
Oh, no, we miss you here.
And I'm not over the fact the other day when I came on this programme, you basically compared me to Alan Carr.
Yes,
I'm not even over that.
No, I haven't had that done up yet. Jason's in Marylebone. You give me an idea now. Jason, you're on the radio. Your question to Wes Streeting.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello.
Good morning.
Wes, I had an appointment yesterday to have a blood test, which I was 45 minutes late for due to couldn't park the car in the car park. While sitting waiting, I read the article about Dr. White, I think his name was, who made a horrendous anti-Semitic comment. And as a British Jewish person, I was, believe it or not, I wasn't actually surprised to find out that he hasn't lost his job.
Let me give the background. Martin White is a junior doctor investigated by the General Medical Council. Offensive social media posts from 2023. One said the videos about the Holocaust being a hoax were, quotes, pretty convincing. Another read, me, it's important to represent Judaism and Jewish people fairly and respectfully in art, and I apologise in advance for this. Also, me, Jew banker goblins. The GMC found that those expressions were throwaway remarks and were not considered serious enough to pose a risk to public protection. Your question now, Jason, to the Health Secretary.
The very simple one. Why is he still in a job?
That's a fair question, and one that I asked when I saw the report. So let me talk about this case and then anti-Semitism in the NHS more broadly. So I saw the same report as you, and that was my immediate gut reaction. In fact, my immediate gut reaction was unrepeatable on radio at this time of the morning. My understanding, having asked the GMC about this case, is that those social media posts were in response to posts that have since been deleted and were not in and of themselves, I understand, and I'm going on the basis of an investigation that took place, not having spoken to the doctor or looked at any of the material myself, but I think the defence was he was mocking what were other inappropriate posts online. Now, I think the reason why this has been such a big story is because we've seen so much online what I would describe as incontrovertible, undeniable, and outrageous examples of vile anti-Semitism by people who clearly identify themselves as NHS doctors. And what those people have done is forget not just basic humanity, which all of us should have, but also their professional responsibility to their patients. No one going into the NHS should do so afraid.
No.
And questioning whether they are going to be treated fairly because of who they are, the colour of their skin, their race, or their religion.
So did the GMC get this wrong, Mr. Streeting, in your view?
I think it's hard for me to make that judgment without having looked at that material in detail. There are other cases where I think tribunals have got them wrong, and I've been very robust in challenging. But I don't want to go in with, studs up on this case, having not looked at all of the material, and where the GMC offered an explanation that I thought was rational. But that does leave, nonetheless, a lot of Jewish people in our country, and I know because I've in my own constituency, a very diverse constituency, including a significant Jewish community, people are afraid in the Jewish community that they're going to be treated unfairly or discriminated against because they are Jewish in our National Health Service. And I think that's chilling.
One of your constituents, George, who's in Ilford, is listening. Can Wes assure us he is going to stand again? It was a close call last time. We don't want to lose. And what are his plans?
Yes. I'm standing again in Ilford North. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to give in to the people who tried to take me out. Gaza was a big issue. There were lots of my constituents who felt that the Labour Party hadn't got the position right in advance of the election. And there was a very organised campaign to get me out of the last election. Okay. But Ilford is my home, has been for more than, nearly 20 years now. I'm very proud to represent my home in Parliament, and I'm certainly not going to give in to the hard left who are trying to take me out.
Rachel in Bexley, would Wes Streeting be supportive if they put up taxes and break their manifesto pledges?
I'm not in favour of breaking manifesto pledges. I think that trust in politics and politicians is low, and it's part of our responsibility to not only rebuild our economy and rebuild our public services, but to rebuild trust in politics itself.
Not you personally. Where does the government get the money from?
The fact that the Chancellor, and we're going on speculation here, but the fact that the Chancellor was reported as even considering breaking manifesto commitments tells you two things. Firstly, the public finances are under real pressure. And secondly, she is fundamentally, unequivocally committed to her fiscal rules. And so, therefore, she's got some invidious choices to make, and she's weighing those up. But I've not spoken to the Chancellor overnight. I've seen the reports this morning that she's no longer planning to increase income tax. I think what the news overnight has shown is that people speculate on the budget, but ultimately you don't know what's in it until the day it's delivered. And that includes the Cabinet, by the way. So we will all have to wait and see.
On a related story, before we go back to the calls, the conversation we had with the Jewish patient. We heard this week that NHS staff who care for their patients in their own homes fear some areas have become no-go zones because of the presence of St. George's flags. This is health leaders making this warning, saying that some black and Asian staff feel, quotes, deliberately intimidated. When they see the flag of St. George, what should they be thinking of, Mr. Streeton?
Usually pride. We normally fly our flag in moments of national celebration or on government buildings and schools and places like that. And I'm proud of our flag. I'm proud of the St. George's flag. It does get hijacked by racists and the far right from time to time. And I think the best response to that is to reclaim it, because that flag belongs to all of us, not just some of us. But I am... this issue of racism in our society and racism affecting our healthcare workers and patients... whether it's anti-Semitism directed against Jewish people, whether it is people who are black and Asian being abused, assaulted, we've got a level... I think we've got a level of racism in this country, overt racism of a kind we haven't seen for years. And
what do you mean? Be a bit more specific.
So I've been struck. I've been an elected councillor or MP for the last 15 years. I have not had racism come up on the doorstep of my constituency as often as it has in recent weeks. And people not just saying, I'm really worried about racism, people describing being abused, spat at, shoved, giving racist abuse. And I think we've got a sort of a 70s, 80s style racism that's re-emerged, and we've got to put it back in its box. And government's got a role to play, but all of us have got a role to play. We can't be bystanders to this kind of racism. I thought we'd left this in the past.
What's feeding it? Why the toxicity?
I think it's a number of things. You know, if you look at the history of racism, and we, you know, I say this by way of explanation rather than an excuse. When a country is going through hard times and people are feeling the pinch, that creates fertile ground for resentment towards others and racism. There are legitimate concerns about high levels of migration, whether that's legal migration or indeed the boats coming over. I think that's legitimate, by the way, and I don't criticise people for raising it, and you shouldn't smear people as racist for raising concerns. Right. But nonetheless, there has been an undercurrent of racism attached to that. Okay. So we're not in a great place on this, and I think this country hasn't fundamentally changed. I think this is a decent country, an inclusive country, a respectful country with a live and let live attitude, and long may that continue.
Let's get back to the calls. Many people want to get their opportunity with only the last 5 or so minutes. Terry's in Cranbrook in Kent. Terry, you're through to the Health Secretary. Go ahead. Morning to you.
Morning. Morning, Nick. Morning, Wes.
Good morning.
My question is to you is my son was waiting for 2 years to have an ADHD test, which he has got, and he's confirmed that he has ADHD test, only to be told that the medication he needs may be a 7-month wait. What I want, my question
is, how old
is
your
to
boy?
You,
this is Nick. How old your boy?
He's 27.
Okay.
And my question to you is like, how long has this been going on for, and when will it be resolved?
Very good question, and I'm really sorry you're in this situation. And without going into details, because it's not fair on my family who are not in public life, but this is an issue quite close to home for me in terms of one of my own relatives, and I can imagine what your son is going through, because you know, ADHD, especially if it's quite severe, can be extremely hard to deal with and manage, and has a serious impact on your mental health and well-being, and that's why this medication is important. I am actively looking at... it's been going on for some time now, to be honest, but I'm actively looking at what we can do to deal with this issue of...
I've got to push you a bit more on that. What do you mean by actively looking, Mr. Streeting?
I'm pushing quite hard to make sure that we improve the supply of the medication and the timeliness with which we get it out.
How would you describe the situation currently that you've inherited?
As with many things in the NHS, Nick, it's completely unjustifiable, And it's hard when you hear, in this case, how long people are waiting. It's even worse when you're living with it or someone you love is living with that. And I mean, that's the, in some ways, that's the amazing thing about this job, but it's also the pressure. The amazing thing about this job is I get to do things and make decisions and drive progress that changes people's lives. The pressure is, I know, because the NHS is so important to all of us and affects all of our families, I know what the consequences of failure are, and believe me, that is the thing that drives me more than anything else.
Terry, good luck. Please send, I'm sure, our best wishes to your lad, and I hope the situation resolves itself.
Yeah, and I'd be very happy for Terry to get his details to me via producers, see if I can get some updates.
Thank you. Claire's in Belfast. Claire, you're through to West Streeting. Go ahead, Claire.
Hello, Wes. Thank you for taking the call. I was just going to ask you, when you first became Health Minister, with regards to the Mounjaro injection, you decided to roll it out to all obese patients in order to get them back to work. Would that still be something that you would consider viable?
What is your policy? Where are you?
Yeah, so there's really encouraging evidence around these weight loss drugs that they can make an enormous difference to people who really struggle with their weight, have tried over the years to do the right thing, but it's just been insurmountable. So I think there's lots of really encouraging evidence. And I want to see them rolled out more widely across the NHS, not least because I'm very conscious, not least because of conversations we have in the House of Commons tea room where, let's say, one or two of my colleagues are evangelists.
Name names.
Well, actually, I can name names because Carolyn Harris, for example, who's one of my Labour colleagues, she has spoken quite openly and regularly about the huge impact it's had on her well-being and
of your potential scheme, Mr. Streeting.
Well, at the moment, and this is what makes me uncomfortable, at the moment you can get these on private prescription and they're setting you back £200 a month. Now, who's got £200 a month? Like, okay, people who are on decent salaries, but a lot of people who benefit would not have that sort of money. So now we've got a position where health is linked to wealth. The savings, though, like if you've got people who are having major surgery for things like, you know, having bands fitted or if people are developing conditions that are going to cost the NHS a fortune, I think this is an invest
to
save and everyone
wins. Investment in Mounjaro equals savings. People get to work so they pay tax or they don't cost
the NHS. That's my view. We're trying to drive the price of the drugs down. We're trying to make sure they're available more widely on the NHS. I do just want to flag, though, because I am very encouraged by the evidence, but I do just want to speak directly about the flip side risks of some of this as well. There is a risk that people are accessing these drugs in an unhealthy and unsafe way. As with any drugs, you should use them for specific circumstances, under the direction of qualified medical professionals. What you shouldn't do is think, I'm going to Ibiza, and although I'm skinny, I'm going to have these jabs, and I'm going to buy them online, I'm going to make out I'm heavier than I am. That's the sort of thing that really worries me, and all the issues around positive body image and all of the other things that we're coming to our last minute.
You probably are not aware of the LBC story of a woman weighing less than 6 stone, 38 kilos, we called her Caitlin, was, as you've just described, able to purchase a monthly subscription of one of these drugs from the digital health provider Newman. I'm going to pass you a picture. I'd ask you not to let it be seen because we don't have her permission, so I'll pass that to you. She used an AI-generated image to prove her identity, the need for the jab. I was just going to ask, what needs to be done about these with that woman? If you look at the picture, it's truly shocking. Yeah. With which that, you can do that, you're not on camera. That woman was able to get a weight loss drug.
I mean, these are the cases. I've got goosebumps. These are the cases that really worry me in this context, and we've got to make sure there's a safe prescribing environment. We do have, with the Care Quality Commission, the MHRA, which is the regulator, and we've got enforcement powers. So where people are accessing these drugs inappropriately and with devastating consequences, as we can see, well, I can see in this absolutely awful photo, then action needs to be taken because prescribers have a responsibility and a duty of care, and if they're failing in that, we won't let them do it.
Final question I have to ask this, it's coming from a lot of people. Does West Streeting still retain full confidence in the BBC?
Look, I love the BBC, I really do, but it's not covered itself in glory. It's really let itself down, with not just with this panorama, but I think there are real questions for the corporation more generally about how, like, is it still a public service broadcaster? Why have they gutted local and regional news? Why have they got rid of so many journalists, political journalists, who are holding politicians to account locally and regionally at a time when we're giving more power locally? I do think the BBC's lost its way. I think it's got to, like, it is one of the most trusted news sources in the world. It's an incredible brand. It's got such an amazing history and an amazing present in terms of what it's done for our country, whether that's, you know, the audiences it's drawing in for big shows like Strictly, the amount of traitors related puns it's given me this week, or indeed, you know, the top quality journalism and news that it's famous for. So I want to protect the BBC. I want to see it back standing tall with pride, but it's got to get its house in order.
Appreciate your time today. Cheers, Nick. You don't happen to have a picture of your younger brother, do you, so that I can compare and contrast by any chance?
No, I don't. I do have this front page of the Times.
Though, I thought you might want to share this. Junior Doctor. Appearing here on LBC. 9:31. Headlines are next.
The Health Secretary has told Nick resident doctors are holding patients to ransom by going on strike. Wes Streeting says the British Medical Association is irresponsible for allowing the action to go ahead. Thousands of workers are walking out for 5 days across England in a row over pay. Downing Street has refused to deny the Chancellor will drop plans to put income taxes up in the budget. Rachel Reeves and Sir Keir Starmer are said to have ditched the idea over fears breaking a manifesto pledge would lead to a backlash. The BBC is awaiting a response from Donald Trump after apologising for editing a speech of the US president. The corporation has admitted the clipped panorama footage was misleading, but said it will not be paying compensation. LBC weather, storm Claudia, bringing heavy rain and strong winds for most of England and Wales. Highs of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Have a right cracker of a Christmas. From Aldi's mince pies encased in luxurious all-butter pastry to their Christmas pudding infused with zesty orange liqueur and dark maple syrup, there's a lot that'll knock your stockings off. Go all fancy with Aldi. Specially selected.
The click of the indicator. A rhythm that shifts your focus from the day's work to the journey that's truly yours. With the Clever Jazz Full Hybrid and its famous magic seats, you have the flexibility to handle everything from the school run to a weekend away. Because every journey matters. Book a test drive at Yeomans Honda today. Honda, the power of dreams.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, here's what you're saying about Wes Streeting. This is Luke. Wes was refreshingly open. Now I'm wishing the coup was real. He's so much more engaging than Keir Starmer. Jenny in Horsham. Why isn't Wes our Prime Minister? Brilliant and refreshing hearing him today. He also sounds like a genuinely decent human being. And this one comes in from James. I'm sorry. I deplore Labour, but Wes Streeting for Prime Minister. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark joins me now. Natasha, you've got access to that comment box as much as I have. That's effectively, I would say it's about. I haven't seen a proof like that since Farage first burst onto the scene. Extraordinary reaction,
yeah,
Natasha.
It's overwhelming, isn't it? Actually,
when you read that positive box,
people have been to Wes Streeting. And I think it just goes to show that his relaxed communication style really resonates with voters.
But you turn him a question and he chuckles. You throw in something, he said, "Oh, you would do that, wouldn't you?" Whereas, much as I admire the Prime Minister, he would not have been able to relate on that human level, Natasha.
No,
anyway, what did we hear that was important?
I think that's
Let's get into that.
I totally agree with you, and I think Number 10 Downing Street should be a little bit worried about some of the reaction coming through on our phone lines today. But yes, on a news sense as well,
yep.
Loads of good stuff from Mr. Streeting on the strikes today, of course. Really
very
had his
strong.
Weetabix there, didn't he?
You could hear his voice that really intensified the level.
Yeah, and like I say, you can understand why. He, came into office, gave them a very big pay rise, and now is incredibly frustrated with the way that he feels the BMA are handling these strikes. You know, he's saying to them today, strike should be a last resort. When you say you don't want to be out on strike today, yes, you do. You've had a high pay rise. You're holding patients to ransom. You're putting back our process. You're behaving irresponsibly towards other listeners whose taxes are paying for the NHS getting substandard service, and they will be shocked. I'm a health secretary who wants to work with you. He says it will do damage to patients. Obviously, you heard from the junior doctor in response saying, I hope you listen. I hope you change your attitude and start listening to us. But it's fair to say, Nick, that, you know, the public tide is really turning on this, and especially amongst the BMA and the junior doctors, the resident doctors, sorry, themselves, who privately don't actually support this strike action anymore. So really strong on that, I thought. Of course, you asked him about the story, which is really lighting up Westminster this morning, yep, which is all about income tax and whether the Chancellor is looking at basically dropping that plan to raise income tax in favour of lowering the thresholds anymore. For what it's worth, Nick, I think that would be, actually, there are some ministers that feel that this would actually be even worse, because essentially you're breaking your manifesto promise by the back door. Now, Wes Streeting, it's very clear, doesn't have as much of a clue as any of us about what's going to be in the budget. So he didn't have an answer there. You, of course, then asked him about all of what's been happening this week in terms of that coup. It's fair to say he's very frustrated with what's been happening with Number 10. He refused to comment on that phone call that he had with the Prime Minister. He said the Prime Minister and I are in the same boat. We're being extremely distracted. He said traitors is over and it's now time to focus on the news again. He says, I've always got on with everybody, including Morgan McSweeney. I'm not sure about that. I love the moment where you played him those old clips which have been swirling around social media, where everybody, all these politicians are asked, who do you think is going to become Prime Minister in 10 years? And at the very end, where Streeting goes, oh, I think that might be me. Look, he's refreshingly honest.
Isn't he, Jess?
He has never, ever hid the fact that he might want to be Prime Minister one day. For what it's worth, I do not think he is actively about to launch a coup against the Prime Minister. I think if there are ever a vacancy, it's clear from our reaction that many people would love to see him do that job. I also thought his argument and his response to the doctors and the anti-Semitic comments as well, very, very, very strong about what we'd seen on social media about that. And you know, clearly saying inappropriate comments, doctors should have basic respect and humanity. And he's standing again in Ilford North.
Yes.
That's going to be really tricky. We must remember to play that clip back to him when it comes to the election, in case he decides to do a chicken run.
Just lastly, from your political experience, obviously we get ready for the weekend editions, particularly the Sunday papers. There will be plot and counterplot over what went on, whether it did or didn't involve Number 10, whether it did or didn't involve senior members or chiefs and stuff. We're going to learn a lot more over the weekend, aren't we, do you think, Natasha?
I think so, and I think, to be fair, from the conversations that I've had with people, it's clear that it is not just one person in Number 10 that was told to brief this or to at least put the cat amongst the pigeons. It's very clear that there has been one target, and that has been Wes Streeting, but it's fair to say there are others in Cabinet, of course, that Number 10 Downing Street are eyeing up as potential challenges to the Prime Minister. I think, Nick, to be honest with you, it just feels to me like somebody that's just got a little bit hot-headed and this has all just run away from them. It would have been perfectly fine if they'd come out and said, look, Keir Starmer is not going anywhere, he's going to fight any leadership challenge. But whether it was Morgan McSweeney, one of the Prime Minister's top aides, or somebody else elsewhere in Number 10, they've clearly made this week a huge, huge misstep. And it's unfortunate that we are talking about that rather than talking about the NHS strike, rather than talking about any of the good things that the government are doing. That is how many people in Number 10 feel this week. I'm sure that the Sunday papers will be filled with all of the gossip and intrigue from what has been happening in the Westminster corridors of power, as me and Aggie Schomburg have been picking up all week. It's a pretty unhappy ship in there at the moment, Nick.
You and Aggie need to put your respective feet up and have a break over the weekend, because I'm sure you'll be back at it as of Monday. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor. John, coming to you as the first call. I just want to reflect, as I was chatting with Natasha here, what's coming into the inbox. Dave in Chesterfield, I'm not a Labour voter. In fact, I despise them. But Wes, it's interesting, he just used his first name as well. Wes sounds like a nice guy who I'd actually go for a beer with and could support. That will, I would suggest, Natasha knows better than I, that would be music to their ears that you'd want to have a beer with this bloke. JG says, the health secretary does come across as the highest standard of politician. I hold no candle for the Labour Party. My wife is a resident doctor, but as Mr. Ferrari's, that's very kind of you, as Mr. Ferrari's identified, his communication skills and emotional intelligence could contain the keys to Number 10. John in Cowbridge, your reaction to what you heard for 30 minutes or so with the health secretary. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good to speak to you. First time caller here.
Great to have you on, sir. How long have you been listening, sir?
With what the Health Secretary had to say to you.
Yes.
I felt he dealt very well with all of the questions that were put to him,
yep.
Some of which were quite tough. But he was refreshingly honest, and I think that's absolutely great from a politician. And quite frankly, if Keir Starmer's motive earlier on in the week was to try to dispel rumours of a leadership contest, I think he's just brought it on.
John, can I ask you, in fact, I'm going to answer the question then ask you. The question I'm about to ask you is, what was he displaying that you don't get from Sir Keir? And I would say two things. Emotional intelligence, which has just been put forward by JG, one of my texters there, and also humour. A sense of humour and an EI that is, it may well be present, but it doesn't always come across on the phones with the PM. John, what did he display for you that's different?
I would agree with both of those things, but I also put honesty into the mix as well. I was saying, Nick, some of those questions were quite tough that he had to answer, and he did answer them, especially when he was asked about standing for election in his constituency.
Yep.
He was resolute about that,
yep.
Which is obviously...
And lastly, and by the way, I'm fortunate, I'm sitting opposite him, so he metaphorically bared his teeth towards the BMA. He raised the standard of his voice. It was very punchy. I had to... fortune of seeing, I could see how determined he was. What's impact going to be, and was it, if you're trying to negotiate a peace, it's not necessarily a great idea to come on LBC and start going after the people you're trying to do a deal with. Was he right to do that, John?
Yes, I think so. I think he highlighted that it's not the majority of doctors, as the poll that you quoted suggested.
Mm.
Most of those people, I think, are decent, hard-working individuals, but you've got a number of people here in the BMA who are just creating mischief, and it's about time that a decent politician stood up for the values of British people. And for that, I support him.
Really enjoyed our conversation. Look forward to bringing you again. Be like John, first-time caller, first class too. Get it off your chest, get it on the radio, and call me on 054. No idea what happens next. Bill's in Portsmouth. Bill, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm good. Well, I'm rather enthused by that interview, because my job is to make these people, politicians and others, come alive and answer questions for you and others. And I think for once I can say, nothing to do with me, but we have found one who does give you the answer, which is quite refreshing.
Well, that's why I wanted to call in. I've been a lifelong sort of fairly right-wing voter pretty much all my life.
Right.
Probably because of my father's position. He was a right-wing supporter, and,
yep.
and that's where I find myself in life. I'm now in my 60s. Wes came on this morning, and I found him refreshing, honest. He wasn't afraid to tackle and answer your questions, and he didn't avoid anything. I think that's the bit that I liked, that he came to the table with honest answers. You
yep.
might not have liked some of the answers, but he actually answered all of your questions. And I like the fact that he's got a challenge with the doctors. He's
yep.
given them a cracking pay rise, and he was quite...
Was he right to up the ante in that way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's doing in the background everything that he's got to do to get peace and harmony in the NHS. And these things, it is, as he says, massively complicated, and it takes time. And the extra stress that the doctors are putting on him, because they're now wanting to go on strike, which means he's even got to find even more money than he needed a week or so ago. That just...
And I think the other frustration which he shared with me, I can't remember whether this went out on live on the radio or not, is that, of course, he's managed to get the waiting list down. This, all this strike action now, will, of course, put the waiting list, you can join the dots, is simply going to undo all the work he and his colleagues have done.
Well, that was the point. And he didn't shy away from saying that either. And I thought that was very admirable. And that's why I thought I'd wanted to ring in and just say, you know, from a right-wing perspective, where's... Keep it up. I don't think you want to be Prime Minister for quite a long while yet. Get the NHS sorted out.
Well, my gosh. If you had a politician, and let's say it's going the right way, he's not going to be helped by these strikes, but he's getting the waiting list down. If you were the man or woman who fixed the NHS, well, it'd be a cakewalk into number 10. Bill, thanks for your strong views. We'll return to this. And also, we might try and put a call into the BMA. He wasn't holding back. What might their reaction be? They're more a political body than a medical body, so says the Health Secretary. It's 9:45, LBC News headlines, Lottie Morley.
Health Secretary Wes Streeting has told Nick resident doctors are holding patients to ransom by going on strike. Downing Street has refused to deny the Chancellor will drop plans to increase income tax in the budget. And the BBC is waiting for a response from Donald Trump after apologising for editing one of his speeches. LBC weather, storm Claudia bringing heavy rain and strong winds for most of England and Wales, highs of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25, anti-clockwise from junction 26 at Waltham Abbey to 25 at the A10. A lorry's broken down and one lane is closed. And then also on the M25, anti-clockwise, there are delays of about 2 miles to junction 17 at Maple Cross. And that was after an accident that happened earlier. On the A245, the Portsmouth Road, it's slow both ways to the A3 at Paines Hill. That's following an accident. In Upper Edmonton, Conduit Lane is closed both ways because of an investigation. Those investigation works are still taking place. Now, the roads are very wet after all the heavy rain. Lots of surface spray reducing visibility. And on the underground, there's no Piccadilly line between Rainers Lane and Uxbridge, and minor delays on the Hammersmith and City line.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
First day of a doctor's strike, and the health secretary is on LBC getting a standing ovation. That's not normal. And meet the artist who is trying to get money for Old Rope.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
This Saturday, the £15 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
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 Yes, the Lotto jackpot must be won this Saturday. What are you waiting for? Get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Waitrose presents...
And the main event.
One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Enough for me.
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved you best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble, wrapped in dry-cured beetroot smoked bacon, with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Thanks to BT Business. Today I'm looking at cyber security protection and the steps needed to stay secure. And I caught up with Millie Czar, a BT cybersecurity expert, to discuss this further. Millie, thanks for coming on. So let's start. What are the top three things a small business needs to do to get protection?
A really simple, basic one that we don't think about often is changing your passwords, whether that's actually thinking about when was the last time you changed the passwords on your devices. Are all the passwords potentially the same for everything that you're logging into? And how often are you updating the passwords on the Wi-Fi in your offices if you've got contractors that are coming in and they've had access before? So things like that, having a really good cadence and introducing that into the business is a fantastic way to really protect yourself. Another way that a business can really protect themselves as well is educating employees. It's imperative that we think about cybersecurity not just as a tech thing, but it's really a human thing as well. It's all about the human behind the computer and training your team to really be aware and conscious about what emails are they opening. Does something look like slightly suspicious? If it does, trust your gut. As a more like reactive thing you can also do is just backing up your data. We all had that experience where our phone has shut down and we've lost our last Snapchat, our last memories in our phone from an individual perspective. So imagine the impact that might have as a business.
And in a business, who do you think should be responsible? Should there be an IT manager? Should it be the owner? Should it be spread across everyone?
100% spread across everybody at different layers, different use cases. As the business owner, they should be the one to set the tone and introduce cybersecurity into the culture of the company. And that means leading by example and introducing policies, like I said, the password changing, making sure that employees are having the right training as well. And then on the second layer, definitely if you have the resources to have somebody in an IT department to kind of manage these things and the responsibility to make sure the software is up to date, you've got the right software. If an employee is coming or leaving, how are you managing their data? And if you don't have that resource, there are really fantastic companies that you can go to that will help you with that and manage that service for you.
And presumably prevention is more cost effective than trying to recover after some kind of cyber attack.
Oh, completely. I like to use the analogy of you've got a shop front, you can shut the door at the end of the night and then hope that nobody breaks in. Or you can kind of have a security system in that alerts you, that has some shutters, that's got locks that are reinforcement of the actual building itself. Because if you kind of think about if somebody does get in, and you log online for the day and your website is down and you can't access your invoices, you can't trade anymore. Your team's resources and time are spent trying to recover their data. And for a small business, this time away from trading and actually doing the day-to-day job can be critical. And in the UK, I think around 45% of businesses, SMBs, small and medium businesses, have had some form of cyber attack. And 60% of those are unable to recover.
So what tools do businesses actually need to make a practical difference to their security?
I see it as kind of multi-layered. I see it as your team or your human firewall. So you need some tools that are in there that are actually training your team on a day-to-day. And then when that team open their phone or their email from bed at home in the morning, or they're opening their laptop in the office, those devices themselves need to be protected. So you would need some form of device protection, typically like an antivirus tool. And then thinking about what your employees do once they're actually on those devices. They're browsing the internet, they're opening emails, they're using cloud-based apps. So you need some form of cloud-based security then to support them whilst they're doing that part of it. I'd also say, again, going back to having some form of reactive software that helps you then recover any data that you may have lost that's critical to you and your customers. Having those tools are critical. It also differentiates businesses in the market as well. I'd much rather transact with a company that I know takes cybersecurity seriously than a counterpart that may not as well.
I've learned a lot. Thank you, Millie Zahr, and thanks to BT Business.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Let's pick up on the reaction to Wes Streeting. Dave says, I'm not a Labour voter, never have been, but listening to Wes was so refreshing, I could be turned. Johnny Murnane says, fantastic, Wes Streeting, at last a straight-talking MP. Well, this is an interesting one, actually, from Kelly Withers. We need Wes in the job he is in at the moment. He's honest but realistic. He's strong and not as scripted as others. That is what's coming through. And he went off script, I would suggest, a little bit, because he came in brandishing a copy of the Times newspaper, and indeed I challenged him about the resident doctor strike, junior doctors of once were, and he pointed to the fact that they are opposed, the strikes are opposed by most doctors. And he had this pretty punchy message after we took a call from a resident doctor. He had a message for the doctors, and particularly for their union, or rather the BMA.
And I'm sorry, but when you say, I don't want to be out on strike today, yes, you do, because you have made that choice. You have done so having had a 28.9% pay rise, the highest in the public sector 2 years in a row. And on those things that you've just mentioned, you say they take time. Yes, they do, because it is complicated. So to hold patients to ransom and to be out on strike setting back the NHS because you don't think we're going fast enough, and because the leadership of your union are not honest enough that some of this change takes time, is extremely irresponsible. It is extremely unnecessary. And the other listeners to this show who have not had a 28.9% pay rise, whose taxes are paying for our National Health Service, and who are receiving a substandard service, not least because of the damage that these rounds of industrial action are doing, I think they will be quite shocked, actually, that against the backdrop of a health secretary that wants to work with you, who acknowledges these are challenges and wants to address them, and has given you the biggest pay rise in the public sector 2 years in a row, I think people will be shocked by the BMA's reprehensible behaviour. So don't tell me you don't want to be out on strike, because that's exactly where you are. You made that choice, own it, and own the damage it will do to your patients.
And just to clarify, of course, the health secretary was speaking directly to a resident doctor who said he was reluctant to take that action. That's why you hear me say I'll give a response, but I won't. Let's get back to your responses now. Sue's in Watford. You're trying to do a deal with a body of people and you call them out like that on radio. Is that the right way to get things done, Sue? Morning.
Oh, absolutely, Nick. I tell you now, Nick, I almost feel I'm getting my mojo back for the politics.
Oh, how interesting.
Wow. Yeah.
Tell me why.
I have felt so disengaged, sick and tired of hearing the constant drivel that the blaming the previous government. He's come on board into your show, which was brilliant.
I wasn't brilliant. Yeah, go on, you go. Yep.
Well, you were pretty good, Nick. But he came on, he didn't start going on about what he's had to pick up, what he's inherited. He just got on with the questions. He held people accountable. He was absolutely, that bit you've just played absolutely got me tied into who he is as a person.
Mm-hmm.
He called it out. The BMA are just playing games. My daughter works in the NHS.
Oh, does she?
A lot of them do not want this.
Mm.
They want to get on with their work. They want to get on with what they're called to do. You know, this is a really, you know, our medical teams are amazing. And he has come in and started to make a difference. And I also agree that he needs to stay in this role for a bit longer.
If he did that, Sue, that would be a lifetime achievement. We should name if he puts it right, we should name a hospital after him.
Yes.
Did you say it was your daughter who has... How long has she been working for the NHS and how has she... Go on.
She's been working for the NHS since university, so she's, 40?
Right.
Loves her role, works in a great hospital.
And things have been getting tougher or things are getting a little better. Actually, at the coalface, what would she say to you, do you think, Sue, your daughter?
At the coalface, in her experience with the hospital she's in, she's proud to work there. It's a well-run hospital, but she knows that's not the case in all hospitals.
No, of course.
Tell you now, Nick, can I just say something else?
Briefly,
in a very difficult situation of where do I vote, where do I go, and it's been reform. I tell you what, Wes would actually get my vote.
Well, I likened it to the first incarnation of Nigel Farage and the level of support, and that's exactly what we're hearing. Sue, thank you. Give my thanks as well to your daughter for the job she does. You had the last word. Now, just before I go, I want to tell you, as we've discussed earlier in the show, the Home Secretary is looking at Denmark-style reforms to drive away what are termed asylum shoppers. Well, we've sent our man. There's only one way to find out. Will it work? We send LBC's Henry Riley to Copenhagen, and he'll file his reports next week. And I will tell you more, of course. Hopefully, the deal we've been able to do with the help of the MOD for Jim, the Afghanistan veteran. I think I'll be in a position on Monday to confirm that. But I'm done. If you missed today's show, listen back on free on Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions, put your news categories in the order that you want, pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it for the week. James O'Brien is waiting the other side of the news here on LBC. I will be with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. It is both unacceptable and inexplicable, but extraordinarily, the entire world doesn't listen to LBC. I know. I can't believe it either. If they did, I think the reaction to that phone-in with Wes Streeting would be of national, certainly electoral significance. And as elections loom ever closer, of course, his easy manner. And I don't know if you've ever noticed this about the guy. He hardly ever ums or ahs. Even professional broadcasters are quite a lot. But he has reached parts on our switchboard that very, very few politicians have reached. And, of course, he's not a racist populist, which helps enormously as well. We may get stuck into that later in the programme, or we may not. But we begin with the income tax hokey-cokey.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Health Secretary has told LBC resident doctors are irresponsible for going ahead with strike action. Thousands are walking out across England for 5 days in a long-running row over pay. The British Medical Association is demanding a 26% pay rise. West Streeting says they've already had pay rises totalling nearly 30% in the past 3 years.
Strike should be a last resort. And I'm sorry, but when you say, I don't want to be out on strike today, yes, you do, because you have made that choice. You have done so having had a 28.9% pay rise. So to hold patients to ransom and to be out on strike setting back the NHS because you don't think we're going fast enough is extremely irresponsible.
Downing Street has refused to deny the Chancellor's abandoned plans to break a manifesto pledge by raising income tax in the budget. She had been widely expected to do so, hinting just days ago the alternative would be deep cuts to public investment. But it's thought the government feared a backlash from Labour MPs and from voters. Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy has told LBC the Chancellor remains totally focused on the public interest.
Look, I'll always support the Chancellor. I've known her for a long time. We've been friends for 15 years now, and in every conversation I've ever had with her, I know that she's fiercely focused on the interests of the public and is prepared to face down people who aren't.
The BBC says it won't be compensating Donald Trump after he threatened to sue the broadcaster for $1 billion. The broadcaster has apologised to the US president, though, for a clip that made it look like he'd incited violence on the night of the Capitol riots. Officials are investigating after a man suspected of wearing a fake Navy officer uniform attended a remembrance service. He joined hundreds of people for a wreath-laying ceremony in Llandudno on Sunday. The Ministry of Defence says impersonating a naval officer could be a criminal offence and it's taking it very seriously. And heavy rain brought by Storm Claudia is causing travel problems for parts of the country. Roads in Essex and Norfolk are flooded and trains have been cancelled at stations in Birmingham, Hereford and Exeter. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 117 points at 96.96. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, Storm Claudia bringing heavy rain and strong winds for most of England and Wales. Bright with some sunshine in Scotland, highs of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Get hosting sorted with Black Friday deals on the UK's best broadband technology.
Yeah, but can it handle the whole family online all day long?
Sure can. EE's full fibres, ready for it all. It's ultra fast and ultra reliable.
And what about my current contract?
Rip it up. We'll give you up to £300 towards your early exit fees.
Amazing.
So switch to EE today. Offer ends 11th December.
Up to £300 credited to your EE account. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. New customers, 62% availability, 24 months terms of.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. That's a really odd morning in many ways, politically. I mean, there are two stories dominating political discourse, and oddly, one of them at this moment in time, from where I am sitting, is not actually the resident doctors' strike. And the fact that the Health Secretary can come on to LBC and have an absolute stormer, and Nick wasn't exaggerating, the response in our inbox, in fact, I give you an indication of how significant or how impactful, a dreadful word, but sometimes it's the only word that works. That was, I'm not looking at my inbox now. I'm looking at a message I got from an old mate of mine. I mean, literally, someone who listens to LBC perhaps a little bit more than is healthy, but rarely bothers to get in touch to tell me what he thinks about other programmes. He was so refreshingly open. I was taken aback. With more Labour politicians like him, I would lean their way. And that is, I mean, look, my mate is politically engaged up to a point, but he doesn't live and breathe it like some people do. And he certainly doesn't bother getting in touch with me to comment on politicians' appearances on LBC. So in some ways, I find that more significant than the churning inbox with praise, including one. And I mean, you never read the minds of these people. I thought Nigel Farage was the only politician I liked, but go Wes. They couldn't be more different, both morally, politically, and of course, with regards to their attitudes to people like Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. But our politics is very often an emotional thing, isn't it? If you want to find out a little bit more about him, then I would recommend the episode of Full Disclosure that we recorded together, I think last year or the year before, where he really does, and his memoir is pretty extraordinary as well. He's an extremely and exceedingly human politician, but he's also the Secretary of State for Health. And there's a resident doctor's strike today. I mean, he should really be sort of up to his neck in criticism and or abuse on a morning like this. But he somehow managed to avoid or evade responsibility for that while pinning it all entirely on the doctors, or even perhaps the third of doctors who actually voted for it. I don't know that there's much to be gained from us just taking a cavalcade of callers saying, I love Wes, or wow, he was really impressive. But I'd like to find some way into it. Perhaps the way into it is to look at the broader political week. So we'll do that now. The other thing about the... I'm in a really strange position this morning. I wonder whether you are as well. In that I think I am crosser with the government about the fact that my income tax now looks likely not to go up than I am about almost everything else that they've done in the last 18 months. How the hell does something like that happen? What's really got your goat today, Jimbo? Oh, it looks like my income tax is not going up. What? Well, I mean, I really did believe that this black hole, where 30 billion, I think, entry level, this 30 billion can only be addressed by doing what is the most straightforward and necessary fiscal change, which would be an increase in the amount of income tax that people like me, there's a little bit of debate to be had about how far down the earnings ladder we go when raising more income tax, but people like me should certainly be paying a little bit more. Listen, I'm what is called a proper patriot, which doesn't mean I spend my weekends putting up tatty nylon flags in the dark in areas where the residents have expressed no desire to have tatty nylon flags cable tied to their lampposts. And it doesn't mean that I think if you are black, then you're not really British or English. I am a proper patriot in that I want the very best for my country, and I'm prepared to do my bit, up to a point. I'm not a entirely selfless individual, but the best thing you can do as a patriotic citizen is pay your taxes. And I think I should be paying more in the current climate. Be nice by the time the next general election comes around if we feel that crisis has softened, but I feel that I should be paying more taxes, and I was prepared to. I was almost, and I know you're going to think this is ridiculous or incredibly insulated from the fiscal realities that many people face, I was almost looking forward to it. The political fallout of a manifesto pledge notwithstanding, a rise in income taxes was, I felt, necessary, and they've made me feel a bit stupid. Because either it wasn't necessary, which means I've misunderstood everything, or it is still necessary and they've bottled it. It also, and this is where perhaps the Kremlinology becomes a little bit unhelpful, I also think it possibly inflates the balloon that we popped earlier this week, which also makes me feel a little bit stupid, because if this has been done to appease Labour MPs, as seems to me most likely, I think you can sell the country, certainly 3.5, 4 years out from a general election, you can sell the country hard medicine. You know, you can sell them tough love. Ultimately, you've got enough time for the impacts of an unpopular policy to produce popular results, to absorb the short-term pain of